me, please. I pledge allegiance to
the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome to this morning's meeting, August 17th, Board of Supervisors. At this time, I'm going to have the clerk read in the changes, and then we have one added item.
You have several changes to today's agenda. You have added items on consent agenda. Item B38 is a request by board members to allocate $2,500 from district community project funds. District 1, $250. District 2, $250. District 3, $1,500. District 4, $250. And District 5, $250. To the San Luis Obispo Symphony for rental of buses to shuttle residents and visitors to and from the 2004 Pops by the Sea concert. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. B39, request by board members to allocate $2,500 from community project funds. District 2, $200. District 3, $1,000. District 4, $1,300 to the Boys and Girls Club of South County for their after-school programs. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Item B40 is a request by board members to allocate $1,400 from community project funds. District 1, $1,120. District 2, $280 to the Adelaida Historical Foundation for the Lincoln Adelaida School renovation project. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Item B41 is submittal of a notice to commence negotiations for the exchange of property tax revenue and annual tax increment for annexation number 87 to the city of Paso Robles Beachwood. Recommend approval. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Under amended items on consent, item B26 is submittal of a resolution extending the solid waste collection franchise agreements with Paso Robles Country Disposal, San Miguel Garbage, South County Sanitation Service, Sanitary Services, Mission Country Disposal, and San Luis Garbage. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that the item be amended by replacing page 3 of the staff report with the attached page that corrects the performance standard number 1. Another item under added items for consent agenda is item B42, request to approve agreements which have been clerks filed with the San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau and the Economic Vitality Corporation for contributions to other agencies that were approved for funding during the 2004-2005 budget hearings. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Your board is being asked to consider adding this item to today's agenda. The need to add this item arose subsequent to the 72-hour noticing requirement of the Brown Act. Your item will not be in session again until September 14th, thus the need for placement of the item on your board's agenda. Your board is to take an action on this the motion for the need to place this item on today's agenda and a motion to add the item, both of which can be combined into one motion. A unanimous vote of the board members present is required to add this item to today's agenda.
Okay, we'll take care of that first, and I need a motion to
so moved.
For need second. In addition. By Sajjan, second by Bianchi. Does that need a roll call?
Sure. Mr. Shashian?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye. Well, that B42 is then added to the agenda. With that, then, we'll take a motion to approve the presentation calendar.
Move approval. Second.
Moved by Mr. Shashian. Ms. Pinard. Second by Mr. Shashian. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Shashian?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye. And with that, then, I will turn this over to Mr. Sajjan, who will present the first presentation this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and remind me, folks, next year I'll wear one of the green vests so I look just like you. It gives me great pleasure to read this resolution recognizing August 2004 as Clark Center Volunteer Appreciation Month in San Luis Obispo County. I'm going to read this, present it to you. We'll have a picture with the whole team up front here, then we'll ask Mr. Jared or Michelle to say a word or two. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the Clark Center Association has dedicated corps of 200 volunteers in support of the association's mission to support and promote the performing and cultural arts for the enjoyment, entertainment, and education of our community. And whereas these volunteers fulfill the needed roles of ticket takers, ushers, parking lot attendants, concession, office and box office workers, for professional touring, community, and school shows. And whereas these volunteers have unselfishly worked 9,572 hours during, yes, let's hear it. during the 2003-2004 performing arts season. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, does hereby recognize August 2004 as Clark Center Volunteer Appreciation Month in San Luis Obispo County. Would you please come forward?
Good morning. I'm Frank Jarrett, the president of the Clark Center Association. On behalf of our board of directors, I would certainly like to thank the Board of Supervisors for this proclamation and the recognition and the honoring of our wonderful volunteers who perform a vital part of the operation that we have at the theater. So I'd like to thank you again for that. I'd like to introduce our Executive Director, Michelle D., who would like to say a few words about the Clark Center Champions. Michelle?
Thank you, Frank, Board of Supervisors, and San Luis Obispo County community members. As Executive Director of the Clark Center Association, I know how essential our volunteers are to our operations. We have just three full-time staff, myself, our office manager, Kelly Stein, and Ryan Lloyd in the box office. The rest of our daily operations are covered by the nearly 200 Clark Center champions, our loyal volunteers. At the Clark Center Association, we have two main purposes. First and foremost, we are responsible for all patron services from providing ushers, ticket takers, concessionaires, and parking attendants whenever we have shows, as well as docents for our free public tours of the Clark Center. All of these services are provided to the public by our Clark Center champions in green. We could not operate without them. Just in the last year alone, our champions have put in almost 10,000 volunteer hours. Thank you to Leon and Frank Parks, our new directors of volunteers, for organizing the Corps, sending out email and mail correspondence, and keeping the shows at the Clark Center staffed for the safety and protection of the public and our beloved Clark Center. To the usher captains who are here today, Jean Bowser, Pam Clare, Donna Long, Jane Kidder, and our newest captains are Lee Talkamp and John Aiken. Thank you for making a high-profile commitment to oversee the volunteers at our events. To our concession captains, Lee Cox, Mary Pinoli, June Gator, and Miles Coleman, who always have a soda, a cookie, and a smile waiting behind the counter, no matter how busy it gets during intermission. And for Suzanne and Terry Rutland, for keeping track of all of the hours donated by our volunteers and organizing our annual recognition events. This year's event on Saturday, August 28th at the Portuguese Hall has already seen an increase in participants over last year. No doubt the mimosas have something to do with that. And I did mention that we have two purposes. Our second purpose is to bring in professional touring shows. Our first show in our third anniversary season is The World of Gilbert and Sullivan on Saturday, September 25th at 8 p.m. During the day from 1 to 5 p.m., we're going to have an open house open to the public to celebrate the start of our third anniversary season. Starting at 1 o'clock, we will have free public tours, door prizes, and giveaways throughout the evening. We will also have ice cream from Doc Bernstein's Ice Cream Lab. That date again is Saturday, September 25th, from 1 to 5 p.m. for the open house and our first show, The World of Gilbert and Sullivan, 8 p.m. For more information, go to our website at clarkcenter.org. To all our volunteers, from Fran in the box office to my previous next-door neighbor, Mary, who doesn't mind ushering at the last minute, a wholehearted thank you from our board and staff. Thank you, supervisors, for honoring our volunteers with this resolution proclaiming August 2004 as Clark Center Volunteer Month is much deserved. Thank you.
Thank you very much, one and all. With that, seeing no other comments, then we're going to go into our public comment period. The opportunity for members of the public to present on items that are not on our agenda and within the purview of the Board of Supervisors. And again, remind you that a request to speak form should be presented, and the 3 minutes has been allocated for your presentation. We'll start with Joe Kelly, followed by Linda Hall.
Joe Kelly, Rancho La Asuncion. Mr. Chairman, what I have just handed you was a claim for refund of taxes. I intend to exhaust every legal avenue, whether it's to hold you, the Board of Supervisors, accountable and responsible for your appointed board members, committee members, namely the Assessment Appeals Board. This is done under the auspices of, as it's stated on their Revenue and Tax Code, Section 5096, Board of Equalization, SCO 1-06. That's the proper form by the county. So all we now is run the gamut of time and see what happens. I certainly do hope that you will forward it to your risk management person or whoever is responsible for it so that it can be evaluated and so that there will be an investigation of this. I will be speaking more on the issue of B-37. Thank you.
Thank you. And for the record, it has been handed to the clerk of the board, who is also the clerk of the Assessment Appeals Board, and will take appropriate actions. Linda Hall, followed by Michael Kovacs.
Hello. My name is Linda Hall, and I'm here today to speak about something that I think is just a real shame that's going on with a fellow that has property on Main Street in Cambria. I've been unable to get any help through the political channels, but I'm just going to run through something here. This has to do with the owner of the shopping center that's right in the middle of town. It's huge. And this fellow, I'm just going to run a chronology here real quick. June 8th, 1998, in Santa Barbara, Coastal Commission issued a permit. March 11th, because they had misinformation given to them, March 11, 99, in Carmel, they revoked one of their own permits for the second time only in their history. November 5, this is in chronological order, 1999, it was back on the county agenda, which it couldn't possibly legally be. May 24th, 2000, Coastal Commission finally sent a letter, and there's a whole lot of stuff in between this here, saying what part of no jurisdiction doesn't the county understand. And finally, this was lost at the Supreme Court level not too much later. One of my former real estate clients told me that this guy that owned the shopping center was not only the retired CEO of Lockheed, but he never quit. Well, I guess he missed this one. Now we have a situation, and I tried to get you, Shirley, and I tried to get your planning commissioner, and nobody wanted to touch it. Right across the street, there's 220 feet of frontage with a cliff about 60 feet straight down in a mini forest. But never mind the aesthetics. It's well understood that a private property owner who is getting benefits on a public street, such as a stoplight or a turn lane or whatever, pays for it. Bank of America down at the other end of the street, I understand, is paying for their stoplight. Well, now the public funds, and I think there's federal and state funds being used on this project on Main Street as well as county funds. You're putting in a 14-foot wide Long Island, not a, a place to go, but and having to cantilever a sidewalk 60 feet up in the air through a on a place that's loaded with water coming out of the mountain and destroying this guy's private property. Oh, yes, they say it's in the county right-of-way, but this is a right-turn lane solely for the private property owner's shopping center, a left-hand turn lane, which isn't too bad, and an island in the middle of the street, which, Ms. Bianchi, your assistant tried to tell me for about an hour that this was to save children's lives. The grammar school is next door, not in front of this property and the shopping center. It's to slow people down so they can turn right into the shopping center. Every business owner in Cambria should be incensed if they have a competitor in that shopping center. They are indirectly being given an unfair advantage. So, as I say, this destruction that's going on is ridiculous, and I hope you can do something about it. Thank you.
Michael Kovacs, followed by Jesse Hill.
Good morning, good morning. Michael Kovacs from District Number 5, Unincorporated Areas. Before I forget it, many times I was going to mention, Harry Ovid, it's a very hard time, hard to understand you, what you are murmuring in over there in the back. We never understand 50% of what you are saying. The non-governmental citizens and public, yes, 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 we do not understand. Please speak up a little bit. During the past 4 years, many times, again, the Tribune, our nation's finest regional newspaper, reported to the public white-collar crimes by this county's staff. Over 4 years now, but the county administrator and your board never, never addressed this issue. The ongoing white-collar crimes, embezzlements, stealing of our tax dollars and public funds. Why? Next Tuesday, according to the Tribune, there will be the sentencing of more county staff who has been between 1998 and 2002 have been continuously misappropriating public funds. This issue is not a chicken matter, Harry Ovid. I have been urging your board in general and you, chairman of this board in particular, to pay attention and show more concern for the security of public funds, especially that these embezzlements were discovered by outside cause rather than the internal audit of our elected auditor. Why aren't you concerned about the deficient internal controls over public funds? Two of the Department of Social Services will be sentenced after the long, long trial experience in our courts, will be sentenced a week from today. Why are you helping staff stealing public funds by your ignorance, by your not looking into these matters, by you are not holding the auditor controller and the Department of Social Services director accountable?
Thank you, Mr. Kovacs. I just want to be...
Yes, Mr. Harry Ovid.
Thank you. Jesse Hill.
Thank you, Jesse Hill, 1910 Grant Avenue. I always love following Mr. Kovac because, once again, if I can't sound reasonable now, it's never going to happen. I'd like to say to this board, thanks for working so hard and in passing the South County TDC plan. Unfortunately, I had to be in court in Santa Clara and the water lit during that hearing. But I want to say thanks, I mean, for the from the South County and certainly from me, because that was, and I think TDCs are always going to be a struggle. So anyway, thank you for that. We'll work real hard in the South County to try to make that effective, but I think you're going to find, you know, there's not much support down there. So, but anyway, and then I guess two informational items, obviously. I mean, two of them actually for the public. There's a park meetings, obviously, at the Slow Vets Hall at 7 o'clock tomorrow to discuss the county parks plan. That's a very important meeting. I hope, you know, the public can attend. Also on 9/11, which is fairly easy to remember, we're going to have in the South County, and thanks to Mr. Lenthal and Andreen, a discussion at the Dana Adobe at 1:30. 9/11, 1:30 at the Dana Adobe for a candidates forum, when the supervisor for Ms. Pinard's seat will be discussing the issues. We've sent out the questions yesterday. I don't know, Jerry, if you didn't get them, give me a holler and we'll shoot them along. So that should be interesting. I'll be in Hawaii thinking about it at the time. So the other issue, though, I do want to discuss and just sort of tell you briefly where we are in the South County. And I was just chatting with Jan DeLeo, and she said, well, everybody's getting a little bit paranoid about money. And, you know, you can sort of count us into the mix in the South County with respect to our Quimby fees. We've been doing an accounting in the South County, and we've come up with some additional funds that we think we're short in terms of our money, and I don't blame it on staff. You have an excellent park staff. Don't take this the wrong way, but we're starting to try to get our numbers together a little bit, and we're about $800,000 short in the last 2 years from the calculations that we've done from our traffic and circulation study compared to the parks numbers that we've received. You'll be getting from me a memo as soon as it goes through our parks committee in the South County and then through the NCAC about that. We're concerned about another issue with respect to Quimby's, which are they appear to be, according to the state ordinance, forfeit after 5 years. That's clearly part of the code. And right now, from the numbers that we have, it appears that there's almost $180,000 that has not been allocated and spent that is going to be forfeit in the South County back to the developers at this point. And that's based upon the county records. Once again, I'll be shooting you a copy of a memo. Oh, sorry, I'm out. It'll be coming. Thanks.
And just leave us your itinerary so we'll know where we're at.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. That I have no other one to speak. Ms. Bianchi.
I just wanted to respond to some of the allegations that Linda Hall made. She stated that she had received no help from anyone. She has probably received somewhere, well, I know she spent an hour with my legislative assistant and the project engineer in Cambria, and they were trying to explain the project to her. The Main Street Enhancement Project started some 12 years ago. I believe it was before I was even on the Planning Commission. It's received I don't know how many public information sessions specifically on that. It was discussed at the North Coast Advisory Council I don't know how many times. It's gone through an incredible number of, knowing Cambria, we felt it was best to have as many public sessions as possible for people to understand this project. And Ms. Hall did try to contact me at 6:30 on Friday morning. I had about 2.5 hours sleep. I didn't answer the phone, and I didn't answer it on Sunday night either. So she's correct. She did try to contact me. But I was aware of the fact that she had hours of help from our Public Works Department and my legislative assistant.
Thank you. With that, then, we're going to go into the consent calendar. The first item here would be the public comment. This is the opportunity for the public to speak on items on the consent calendar. Again, reminding you of the request to speak and the three-minute time presentation. First is Eric Greening. followed by Joe Kelly.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. All the planning department items from B18 to B22 are extremely important. Two of them, B20 and B22, involve the environmental consequences of landfill excavation or expansion. Two of them, B18 and B21, involve restoration or cleanup efforts in territory covered by the Estero Area Plan. The feasibility study for restoration of Morro Bay Estuary needs to go hand in hand with area plan policies that should arrest the problems the feasibility study is intended to address. Given that the total cost of the study alone has reached $2.4 million, with much vaster funds needed for the actual implementation of projects, it is clear that soil destabilizing activities and practices throughout the watershed have been subsidized for decades. Costs not borne by the beneficiaries of these activities and practices are now being externalized onto the total public. You need to keep this in mind when you begin work on the Estero Area Plan on September 28th. The EIR on cleanup of the Estero Marine Terminal property raises another Estero Area Plan issue, the extreme narrowness of the planning area and coastal zone in this area. Three-fourths of this marine terminal property is in the Adelaide area, which is probably news to the folks in Adelaide. The Cayucas Advisory Council discussed moving the Estero Plan boundary to encompass the entire property, which is within your board's jurisdiction, and likewise moving the coastal zone boundary, which is not. But if identified in the Estero Area Plan as a program, such a move would be more likely to get through the legislature. Subsequently, the advisory committee extended their boundary request to the whole viewshed all the way to Via Creek, which the Planning Commission thought too ambitious, so those are unsettled issues we'll grapple with. B19 is about monitoring of the Guadalupe oil field cleanup. This huge effort has been out of the press and public mind for a while. You used to have regular agenda items to receive status reports on the progress and issues, but have not done so for a long time. Don't you think it's now overdue? I do. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe Kelly, followed by Michael Kovacs.
Joe Kelly, Rancho La Sancion, B37, a request for approval of policies procedures for the Assessment Appeals Board. A property taxpayer's assessment appeal hearing is an important process. The California Constitution, revenue and taxation laws, property tax rules, the intent of the California legislature, and the California Board of Equalization must be followed. If you were to listen to the Assessment Appeals Board reorganization meeting recording, public comment and reorganization, you would hear an admission of guilt and an admission of historic inconsistent application of Revenue and Tax Code Section 1609, Property Tax Rule 313G, among others. Historic Assessment Appeals Board policies and procedures conflicting with the law should not be used, condoned, or tolerated, and this county needs to do something about it. Again, last week I brought up an issue of continuing education. Give it some thought. It's needed. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Kovacs.
Michael Kovacs from District Number 5, unincorporated areas. I have only 3 minutes to address a department issued, a social department, $77 million budget running so-called controlling department response to our grand jury, to our grand jury's last year report. Well, I don't know how to condense, summarize in this time available for the public to comment on this. During my 40 years with Corporate America's Finance Department, including years with Coopers & Lybrand CPAs, I have seen many reports and that many responses to those audit reports, but I have never seen anything like this. And none of my colleagues and friends and neighbors have seen anything like this, a response like this. I counted in the response by Mr. Collins, I counted a total of 25 wholly disagreements with the grand jury, and about a half a dozen partial disagreements. And of course, the recommendations, each and every one of those recommendations were denied to be implemented. And there are several of them in his response agreeing and stating that the recommendation has already been implemented. Wouldn't the public be entitled to know how those recommendations were implemented and what is the net impact of those recommendations to the benefit of the public? Wouldn't the public be entitled to know? None of these 70 pages of responses talking about the public interest in this matter, especially from a department where the director has been arrested for shoplifting, and two or four of the supervisors hired by this director has been caught for embezzlement and misappropriation of public funds. This director responds arrogantly, counter-offensively, to our grand jury reports and members.
Thank you, Mr. Kovac.
I am appalled.
Thank you, Mr.
that your board is tolerating this.
Thank you, Mr. Kovac. Linda Hall.
You sure?
Yes, Linda Hall again, and I won't need 3 minutes here. I just want to comment on one thing for the public that might be listening to this. The consent agenda is something that's designed for minor things that can be voted on all in one lump here, not be a special hearing action. So item B34 on this consent agenda today reads, request from County Fire to approve a cooperative fire protection agreement with the Los Osos Community Services District and to approve a corresponding budget adjustment in the amount of $943,890. $1 million to approve a cooperative fire protection agreement? Amazing. Thank you.
Anyone else on consent calendar? Seeing none, we'll close it to public and bring it back to board. Mr. Ryan, any items? B-22. Ms. Bianchi?
B-34, just for a staff response.
Mr. Sajjan?
None, thank you.
Ms. Pinard?
None, thank you.
All right. Mr. Ryan on B-22.
B-22 is just a correction. They misplaced Chicago-grade landfill in the 5th District, and actually it's in your district, the 1st District, so I'd like you to take ownership of that.
I know that. that was noted during the agenda review, but we'll get it taken care of. Thank you. B-34, Ms. Bianchi.
I just thought we have both Chief Dan Turner and Executive LOCSD Director Bruce Buell here, and I thought someone might want to respond to B-34.
While they're coming to the microphone, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to point out on that item that the amount of money that Ms. Hall referred to is that's what the service is going to cost, and that's what the LOCSD is going to be paying us to provide that service. The county is the conduit between CDF, County Fire, and LOCSD. As you know, LOCSD went through some pains at a recent election and in response to being turned down for additional funding for the South Bay Fire Department over there, their directors indicated that they wanted to take a look at contracting with CDF County Fire, decided that they would do that after we agreed upon a price for doing it. And so this is really just a formal formal blessing by the board of a transaction in which the money simply moves from the CSD to the county to fund the service being provided by Chief Turner and his folks.
Can I correct one thing you said?
Sure.
It's not LOCAC, it's LOCSD.
Oh, sorry, I thought I said LOCSD.
You know, the advisory council really has nothing to do with this.
I think Mr. Edge answered that question quite clearly for Ms. Hall, as I understood her question, but I'd be happy to answer any other questions there might be.
Okay. Bill?
Bruce. Good morning. Bruce Buell with Los Osos Community Services District. I just want to confirm my district board unanimously adopted this agreement in July, and as your executive officer indicated, it is revenue neutral to the county.
Great. Thank you. Any other question, Mr. Ryan?
Yeah, I just want to congratulate the two agencies for working together and hope you provide very good service for the community out there.
Great. Dan?
If I might respond to that, thank you. We think this is a win-win for all parties. It's going to work out very well in our view and resolve some issues, I think, that will be beneficial for regional fire protection in the community of Los Osos and the area around it and enhances everybody's safety.
Great. With that, then I'll entertain a motion for the agenda.
Second.
And it's just additions and corrections. Moved by Mr. Ryan, seconded by Ms. Pinard. Roll call.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye. With that, then we'll go into our first hearing item of the day.
This is item C1. This is a hearing to consider the 2004 update report of the North Coast Circulation Study and a resolution continuing the existing road improvement fees for the North Coast area. The agenda references that this is in the first district. It's actually in the second district and should be so corrected. And the recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Thank you. With that, then we have Mr. Flynn.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Honorable Board, Dave Flynn with Public Works Department. This is a hearing to review the existing road impact fees we have in the North County area. The study area is along the Route 1 corridor, just north of Cayucas.
Excuse me, Ms. Hall, please. We have business going on. Could you please take it outside?
It starts from the intersection of Via Creek Road and carries north all the way to the county line. To report on the status of the impact fee, government code requires us annually to report building activity. We've seen 24 single-family residents, 3 guest homes, and 1 commercial establishment over the reporting period of December 2002 to April of this year. As of the end of May, we had just over $1 million in the account. Much of that money is being expended on the Main Street project that's being constructed. That is approximately $300,000 has been spent last year, and then we're spending another approximately $800,000 this summer. We had 1 fee appeal this May that was denied. The use of the road impact fees are limited to those that create additional road capacity in the area, and it's incumbent on the county to show that there is a connection between the imposition of the fee and the improvements. So we do that by modeling and showing what increased development will do to the roadway systems. We cannot use these for existing deficiencies, nor can we use them for maintenance of roads and bridges. The fee program is actually shown in Table 11 of the report, and that itemizes all the projects in the program. The significant projects are the Main Street Enhancement Project, currently under construction. We expect to have this completed this fall. We have had about a 4 to 5 month utility delay in working with that project, but we hope to get that completed by Thanksgiving of this year. The next project that we're working on is to improve Cambria Drive and install a signal at Route 1, and that will be done hopefully in 2005 in conjunction with the flood control project that's being done in West Village. In looking at the North Coast area, there are some improvements on Route 1 that have been called for, mainly some passing lanes for operational improvements. These are things that we've been looking at with Caltrans over the last couple of years. Most of the work would be done within the town of Cambria. The X's on this slide show where proposed traffic signals would be going in. The one at Pine Knolls will be going in conjunction with the Mid-State Bank project. Modifications to the plan. We look at our collection of the fee, the ongoing development in that area, and then working with our regional partners on how projects can be developed. We also work with the Traffic Committee of the North Coast Advisory Council on these recommendations. Two significant changes would be the deletion of passing lane improvements, the first being at Harmony and the second at San Simeon, from the fee funding project, from the fee funding program. We've worked with Caltrans for 2 years on trying to develop projects and had monies earmarked for it, but it became apparent as we went in through the process that it was not really a project that could be locally driven and necessarily fee funded. The estimates for doing this work and the area conditions show that this is more of a regional need and is something that Caltrans would have to pursue through their own funding or other means in the future. So the recommendation would be to delete those two passing lane projects from the fee program. However, we do see more internal traffic flow concentrating along Main Street, and in particular at Tamsin Drive, where a significant amount of traffic accesses Main Street. And we foresee this as requiring a signal in the future. And it's recommended that we add to the program an additional traffic signal on Main Street, but that's not expected for quite some time. The fee structure, what we do is we look at the net increase of cost estimates, the cost that we see on Main Street enhancement project, as well as deletion of projects and any addition of the projects. We look at this, and there was a moderate decrease in the overall program. However, the proposed fee is a continuation of the existing fee. The fee program is broken into five areas, A, B through D covering Cambria, and E to the south. In Cambria, there are the three main fee areas, each paying a different amount, depending on how much they access Main Street. With that, the fees, although not shown on this slide, would be recommended to be a continuation of the existing fees. Our recommendation is for you to update the circulation study with the deletion and additions, as well as adopt a resolution which continues the existing fee schedule. I can place this on the document.
I think we have a copy of it in
Dave, I want to just it's in the agenda on page C-118, the very bottom, that I want to emphasize that the signal that is being proposed for Tamsin Drive and Main Street will not be constructed until probably 2020 at the earliest. So that's another, that's a long time away. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's correct.
That conclude your report?
Oh, that concludes.
Thank you. Is there any other questions in from staff? Of staff from the board? With that, we'll go to the public. And again, request to speak form would be appreciated. Linda Hall.
Yes, Linda Hall again. Tamsin Drive, that's exactly what we're talking about. By the way, take a look on Cornwall Street where Mr. Flynn here designed something where the sidewalk goes up the street and then goes around a hillside that would have ordinarily been cut into, but it would have been a private property expenses, a private property expense to the property owner. This is a long time back. They just take it out in the middle of the street and paint the curb red and eliminate the parking. There have been some funny things going on. However, I'm speaking here mostly for the benefit of people who don't understand this and are able to watch Channel 21. It's the private property owner's expense. It's their bill to pay for traffic things, stoplights, turn lanes, etc. that benefit them directly. And in this case, this is not happening. This is being done at public expense. And you want to continue the existing road improvement fees here on this item, C1. And I think that, well, I don't think, I'm positive. I wouldn't be here otherwise. And I'm here because nobody can keep up with anything that drags on for 12 years, first off. And not only that, I just became aware of this a couple of days ago. And everybody says, only Shirley Bianchi can stop this. Nobody's going to stop this but her. And so, fine, I called you, and I left a message. It was 7:30, I think, but anyway, in the morning. And the equipment that Madonna Construction is using had to be rented from L.A. I thought Madonna owned everything. I mean, this is incredible. It's a tractor, Caterpillar backhoe that's huge, cutting into this thing. Enormous expense that you want to continue here, which simply means, which could be solved, and your administrative assistant tried to talk me into this, of how wonderful it was, for about an hour, you're right. You move the calming device, this island, in front of the grammar school that has a U-shaped driveway, two entrances and exits into Main Street if you want to protect the children. This doesn't do anything except benefit the owners of this shopping center at public expense. And doing this thing with this 60-foot high wall, which is probably going to be in a 6-foot wide sidewalk on top of it, it's too visible. I mean, it's that huge white barricade, 200 feet long, over 200 feet long, right in the middle of Main Street, right across from Tamsin Drive, from the supermarket where everybody goes at least once a day, practically, in Cambria. So, as I say, again, I can't say it enough, this really, it's not too late to stop it.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. Anybody else wish to make comment on this item? Seeing none, and bring it back to the board. Ms. Bianchi?
Yes. After 12 years and how many public meetings would you estimate, Dave? 100? 150? I have
It's way up there. I mean,
I have no intention of stopping anything. And unfortunately, oftentimes members of the public decide on the answer they want and believe that no one is answering their questions because they don't get the answer they want. There's been innumerable hours spent, and the sidewalk is not to benefit the children who are in school. It's to benefit the children who and parents and grandparents who walk back and forth from one end of town to the other, as well as the children in the school. In Cambria, in certain locations, it's not possible to walk from one end of town to the other without walking in the travel lane of Main Street, which is extremely dangerous. That's what the sidewalk is for. It's to get people out of the middle of the street. So,
second.
Thank you.
I assume by that we have a motion by Ms. Bianchi and a second.
Well, I thought maybe somebody else might want to make a comment. So I was going to take a breath before I made the motion to for staff recommendations on item 1 and 2.
Thank you. Ms. Bianchi, Mr. Ryan made the second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovin?
Aye. With that, then, we'll go into item C2. Mr. Ogren. Wait a minute. I better have the clerk read the item.
Next item is item C2. This is a hearing to consider an ordinance exempting the Nacimiento project manager position from the county civil service ordinance, adoption of the position's job specification, and submittal of a resolution amending the position allocation list for budget unit 2900 Public Works. All district recommendations for approval and instruct chairperson to sign. And this item was introduced at last week's consent agenda.
Chairman Ovitt, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Department. Today, this item is, excuse me, the first of two items on the Nacimiento Water Project. And the request for an exemption to the civil service ordinance for a project management position on the Nacimiento Water Project would essentially create an at-will position for the project. The recommendations are based on the needs of the project. The next item that will be in front of your board will be recommendations associated with the final contract approval. But it is intended that the project is going to be implemented and governed on a quasi-independent basis with the four agencies that are participating in the project, the cities of Paso Robles, Atascadero, the Templeton Community Services District, and the Atascadero Mutual Water Company. The targeting of the recruitment will be based on the needs of the project and will involve the Nacimiento Commission that's proposed. Those agencies have already appointed individuals to that commission. The needs of the project will be full-time, and a contract employee, as opposed to consulting engineers, are based on full-time needs, the needs to without competing clients, and full-time for the service of the project. In contrast, the Lopez Seismic Remediation Project really did test the limits of our department's ability to co-manage a major public works project with a consulting engineer. Lopez was a $30 million project. Nacimiento was a $150 million project. Lopez was a pre-existing facility on 20 acres. Nacimiento is 45 miles of new construction. Lopez is about 4,500 acre-feet per year in entitlement. Nacimiento is 15,750 acre-feet. Lopez was fully subscribed. Nacimiento is partially subscribed and points to the fact that there will be significant future issues still upcoming on the Nacimiento project. The work for Nacimiento has really just begun. The salary range that is proposed is consistent with the Engineer 5 Utility Division Manager positions in the department, although we do note that the recruitment may need to be based also dependent on qualifications based on the specific needs of the project. In that case, the final contract for employment would have to come back to your board. Well, the contract for employment will have to come back to your board in any case, but if there's a salary range that differs or is proposed from this action, then a modification of the attached resolution would also be required. And that concludes my report.
Okay. Any questions? And as I understand now, the salary of this will come from the Nacimiento project itself?
That is correct. All project costs.
It's neutral, Mr. Ryan?
Yeah, you add this to the county ordinance position, and we have everything listed as unclassified in service, and you listed as an Nacimiento project manager, yet you had something for Lopez, which would work out about the same thing. Another water project you bring up was going to be about the same thing. Is a water project manager something that is, if you're putting a position in here, would one that would be wide enough to, instead of every time you come back with every project, you got to come back and rename that position and redo the ordinance?
No, this position is specifically only for the Nacimiento Water Project. The contrast that I was trying to do was that on Lopez, we did not need to provide a specific recommendation because even though that was a $30 million project and a significant project, we were still able to manage it with existing staff by utilizing a consultant engineer to co-manage many aspects of the project. But that project, again, one-fifth of the dollar amount of this project, really tested the limits of our abilities to co-manage a project with existing staff.
Ms. Pinard?
I'm not sure that the intent of Supervisor Ryan's question was, at least as I understood it, was answered. We have, even though you didn't need a separate one for Lopez, you have many projects that come up. Nacimiento's one. You're going to be having more come up. And the amount of paperwork and authorization necessary to run every job as a separate resolution, maybe we could save some effort and cost for you. And that would be to make that category wide enough so that as you have other interim jobs where you need an interim one position, and it may be a different person each time, depending on what expertise is needed. One's for a dam, one's for pipeline, another one may be for a huge bridge project. Is there a title that we could give this that would cover a little broader spectrum for you? That's what I'm understanding the other part of Supervisor Ryan's point.
And our recommendation will still stand, and for a specific reason. And that is that There is already an exemption to the civil service ordinance for contract employees. And so if we need to bring in contract employees on a temporary basis for other types of projects, we already have the ability to do so under your existing ordinance. The difference in the need to have a specific exemption on nacimiento is that the length of employment is expected to exceed 2 years. The existing contract employee exemption is limited to 2 years because of case law associated with benefits. And so we were not allowed to use that specific exemption for nacimiento. We had to create a separate exemption. So,
Too many more projects that are going to go beyond 2 years.
2 years, right. So this was really specific to the needs of this project. And
Mr. Edge?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. It's a case of the board trying to be helpful to staff here. And we're saying we don't want your help. Thank you very much. Pavo indicated this really is a unique situation, and we don't want to get into a position where we can be accused of trying to create general lower-level positions that are exempt from the civil service process. We've discussed this in the past as we've made most of the department head positions exempt. The council's comfortable with us going there, but you have to be careful not to dip too far into your general civil service ranks and taking them out of the classified service, otherwise you run the risk of being challenged legally on whether or not you can do that under our ordinances. And so we want to be very specific and only do it either at the department head or specifically exempted deputy department head levels or unique positions like this one, and that's what you're hearing from us today.
Thank you. No other questions? Seeing none, then we'll go to the public. Is there anyone wish to make a presentation or comment on this item?
Move approval.
Seeing none, moved by Mr. Ryan, seconded by Ms. Bianchi. Roll call.
Are you waiving the reading?
Yes. Ma'am, we are reading.
You wanted me to read.
The reading.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye. With that, then we'll go to item C3. Madam Clerk.
Next item is item C3. This is a hearing to consider a resolution of San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District approving water supply contracts, which have been clerk's filed, in connection with the Nacimiento Water Supply Project, and approve an appointment to the Nacimiento Commission. This is in all districts. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Chairman Overt, members of the board, this is the second of two action items related to the Nacimiento Water Project. And some say that water projects are planned and implemented not in the matter of years, but in matter of decades. Contracts were first signed by the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control District with Monterey County on October 19, 1959, and now nearly 45 years later, contracts with the four initial participants within the county.
You don't want to rush into things, Pa'avo.
have been approved and executed. Awaiting for your board's final approval and execution. Today's action may be somewhat anticlimactic. You know, we don't have any major PowerPoint presentations, just a quick discussion. January 6, 2004, your board certified the environmental impact report on the project and adopted the notice of determination. On February 24th, your board approved the draft contract and major project policies. As a result, we have literally had dozens and dozens of meetings and hearings with public in general, stakeholder groups, and the participating agencies. And it is with some sense of relief that we're able to make a presentation to your board on a water supply project with very little tension or controversy. The greatest thanks obviously goes to the participating agencies, their staff, and their governing boards. In addition, our project manager up to this point in time, Christina Ferrara, was extremely instrumental. Nancy Orton with the Department of Planning and Building led the environmental impact report efforts. John Jenkins, retired from County Council and in the audience today, has been instrumental in the contract works on the board. And, of course, your board's participation and support has also been extremely valuable. Two noteworthy items in the contracts themselves. The Nacimiento Commission is more than an advisory committee on a lot of the efforts that the Public Works Department does. They have a standing of approving substantive project items, which are any item that we have to bring to your board. We do have to bring to the commission in advance. Your board has final authority. However, if staff were to bring an item to your board that conflicts with the action taken by the commission, then we need to provide written findings and do so in a public hearing. The bottom line on that is that it certainly puts a very high standard of responsibility on staff, which is what we expect in this nature of a project. The other item is that it does provide for an allocation of Nacimiento tax revenues to support the project to the extent that there is a portion of it that is not fully subscribed. Once the project is fully subscribed, those tax revenues will come back to your board's discretion. With respect to the commission itself, the policies that your board adopted in February identify that upon the creation of the commission, there will be deliberations and debates about what powers might be delegable from your board to the commission in real sense. The analogy there that is the best analogy, I think, is the planning commission. There may be some powers that the commission wishes to have delegable, and there may be some that would then in turn be appealable to your board. Our focus has been to first get the contracts executed so that those deliberations and debates could be focused with the agencies and the elected officials who are actually participating in the project, again, there are four that I mentioned earlier. The recommendations do call for your board to appoint one of the board members to the commission. I think that's extremely important, especially in light of the new nature of this commission. If we get into a point where we as staff have to bring a recommendation to your board that might conflict with the recommendation or the actions of the commission, then having a board member on that commission participating in those discussions, I think, will be very valuable for your subsequent board deliberations. And my final item is simply that two of the contracts executed by Templeton and by Atascadero did not include signatures of their attorneys. My understanding is those signatures aren't technically required. However, bond counsel requested those attorneys to provide their signatures on separate signature pages, and so consequently I'm providing those at this time. That concludes my comments.
Ryan.
I just want to make a motion.
But,
I know. I just wanted to put my oar in the water.
You have a question?
Yeah. It's not, a couple things here are not clear, Pablo.
Okay.
And that is that when you're looking for a member of the board and a member for the board to appoint, those are two separate things. And if you're having an action that is appealable to this board, and then yet if one of your recommendations is to have a member of this board on that, then we've created a conflict right off the bat. You to make a decision, then appeal it to yourself, seems not to be in the public's perception
okay.
a good idea. And then what I would wonder is oftentimes on these boards we appoint somebody from the staff who is familiar with this. Like you mentioned, Christine Ferrara is part of this ongoing process. So why wouldn't we be appointing somebody from our organization to represent the count of the board? And then clearly define there's no conflict of interest when something is appealed to us then.
Okay, on the two points. One is on the appointment. The contracts do not require your board to appoint a board member. It is simply our recommendation that you do so. The other three public agencies involved in the process, Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo, and Templeton CSD, have appointed elected officials to this board, and the intent is that the board and the governing board, even though it is substantially advisory in nature, is still made up of the elected officials.
Every place else that we've done that, though, where we've had joint powers agreements, like with Air Quality, IWMA, and whatnot, those boards are independent boards. Their actions are not appealable to us.
Okay.
We're not in the same line of command and decision-making. So whenever we have a recommendation board, we're not on
okay.
that.
Okay, but on the first issue of the appointment, does your board have the discretion to appoint somebody other than who's on your board? And we believe that is the case. The second issue on the conflict, As it stands right now, there are no items that are in the nature of that appealable function. The issue of governance and whether or not this commission is going to seek some real powers from your board is an issue that is going to be of subsequent debate. It's not as it is structured right now. So on that point, I'm merely commenting to the board that, like many natures of many issues of the Noshi Minhwa project, right now we're really at the first step. And there are a lot of issues that are still going to be addressed on the project. And one of them is going to be, what are the ultimate powers of this commission going to be?
Right, and that when we form that kind of a group, then that is what we usually have known as like a joint powers agreement, and it is a separate group. I see Harry shaking his head, but could you please enlighten us as to what other bodies do we have that we appoint a board of supervisors to participate in the decision-making of that body and then appeal it back to ourselves as the board of supervisors? It's just, I'm not aware of any, and I sit on a lot of other boards. So if your intent is future down the line to create a joint powers agreement called the Noshi Minhwa board, that's one thing. But right now, this is kind of a limbo, and I'm very uncomfortable with that.
Well,
just about every board that is that we have members sitting on can appeal a decision to this one. LAFCO, I sit on a couple of them, and I can't get the names out right now. So this is not a precedent-setting issue that we have board members sitting on commissions, and those commissions can appeal to this body.
Harry, that I don't believe is quite accurate. We do sit on LAFCO, but we don't appeal LAFCO decisions here. We appeal whatever the county's participation is.
Would you answer the fact that this is not a conflict?
This is not a legal conflict situation.
Thank you.
Did you direct him what to say, or did you ask him
his
opinion?
No, I asked him.
That sounds like it.
I personally asked him.
Let me rephrase then that question. If there, we often have areas where it's not technically a legal conflict, but the public perception is such that we are in the decision-making role, appealing our own decision to ourselves. And my question then, if we've had legal counsel on that, it's not the same as where we sit on a commission like LAFCO. We don't appeal LAFCO decisions to ourselves. We appeal what the county's part is in that. This is an agency that will eventually probably be its own independent agency.
That's a good point of clarification, because the project is not proposed to be operated under joint powers authority. The project is a county-owned and operated project. What the participating agencies were seeking was a voice that was somewhat stronger than a traditional advisory committee, and that's therefore why, in part, they called it a commission. They wanted the language that they could actually take actions on all substantive matters as opposed to just, making advice to your board. Some of it is purely semantics, because your board, as the board of the flood control district, does have the decision-making role in governing the project. But the unique structure of this commission, and it is unique compared to the other advisory committees that we in the Public Works Department have to work with, recognizes, one is the desires of the participating agencies to have somewhat of a stronger voice than the traditional advisory committee. It recognizes that this is an extremely significant project, not just for the county, but for the region. And it also recognizes that if we do get into issues of conflict, then one member of your board would be part of those discussions from the very beginning. One of the biggest challenges that we as staff have is that when there is a conflict-oriented item and we come to the board, a lot of those discussions are in community groups with advisory committees, and your board members as a whole aren't part of those discussions. And so that's where we wanted to make sure that, based on the significance of the project and what the agencies were asking for, that we also had some balance in there and some representation from the flood control district.
Well, let me just follow this up. Could I finish?
Ms. Pinard, first of all, the other agencies have chose to do the same thing, putting their elected officials on
this. That is correct.
Harry, this
is... same policy issue. Now you can speak.
Well, I would like the ability to be able to start a line of questioning and be able to finish it. The issue with LAFCO is that it is a mandated committee outside of our out of our jurisdiction, so it is substantially different. All of the other commissions, that's what we do when we go and we sit in and listen on these other commissions. We're not a voting member of them. And that's the part that I'm having trouble with. It's good to be part of things and get the briefing, but it's no different than when the Planning Commission comes forward and makes a recommendation. We are the board that is appealed to, but we are not a voting member of the Planning Commission.
I sit on one called CalID where I am a voting member representing the Board of Supervisors, and we deal directly with that in terms of allocations of funds and budgets. And it is not a conflict when it comes back before this board on those items concerning allocation of those funds and budget. And this commission is being set up predominantly for Nacimiento by the purveyors who are using or contractors who are using Nacimiento, and each of those contractors will have a representative on this commission representing their specific agency. And that was entirely how this process is asked to be set up.
Wasn't CalID formed by a state?
No, we're not here to debate the fact. We're here saying that this is not a conflict. And what the rest of the board members, I think, are hearing at this particular point is that they will make a decision on who they want to have sit on that commission, and there's an understanding from council that it is not a conflict. And that was your original question.
Well, just to follow up on that, when we have something that's in our purview, that's not a state mandate, I'm not going to speak to the wisdom of what the state or the federal government does in terms of voting on something and then appealing it to itself. I do have problems with any agency that does that. But this is one we're creating, and I think we have an opportunity to maintain the same high standard that we have done, which is not to put ourselves in a conflicting situation.
Okay, I have some others. Ms. Bianchi?
That line of questioning was fine, except that as the entire Board of Supervisors, we also sit as the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. And it would seem to me that if there's a conflict between one member sitting on a commission and five of us sitting on two commissions, that might be I'm not saying it is a problem. I don't think it is a problem, but it would seem to me that same line of reasoning would be
Let me go to the public
weird.
And does anyone in the public want to make comment on this? And what we're doing here is speaking to the adoption and execution of the contracts and appointment to the commission. Seeing none, then we'll bring it back to board. Mr. Ryan, you had your light on.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion. I don't see a conflict. Our council tells us that there is not a conflict. We sit on many boards that there are funds that are put out through the Board of Supervisors, and that we sit on this board and other boards, and we are voting members on other boards. So I think that's not an issue. My motion is staff recommendation on number one, and to appoint Harry Ovett as a board member for staff recommendation number two.
Second for discussion.
Okay. And Ms. Bernard, under discussion?
Yeah, I want to just get back to the situation where we sit as an entire board, and then that means we are the agency, and we're not appealing something then to ourselves. So we're all five of us sit on the boards that you mentioned, and we do that. There's some financing boards that we sit on. But we're all five of us. It's not one person and then appealing that decision to ourselves. We don't then get to reappeal it to ourselves. We are sitting as the final board. I'm just trying to make the point that it's not necessary to do that, and we have the ability to set it up so that we have that a little bit of an arm's distance. When you have that ability, and you're mandated by some federal law not to do that, why wouldn't you do that? That's my point.
Okay. No other discussion?
I seconded the discussion.
I'm sorry.
I never got my discussion.
Would you like your discussion?
Yes. The three districts through which Nacimiento Project will be flowing primarily, 1, 5, and 3, and since the seats for District 5 and 3 are in flux, it's only reasonable to appoint, and fortunately, I think he's competent, It helps a lot. It's only reasonable to appoint Harry as the supervisor to that commission.
I didn't know
because he will be around for a while.
He'll be around forever.
I didn't know that District 5 was in flux.
I'm humbly.
How did you want me to phrase that, Mike? I'm being polite.
Humbly accept your vote and the.
We haven't voted yet. I think you better wait until you do that one.
It's hard to back off when Shirley comments you. We have a motion by Mr. Ryan, seconded by Ms. Bianchi.
I'd like to comment on the motion.
Ms. Bernard?
Okay, for the record, I don't want to vote against Harry being a representative. There's nothing personal in this. So I will support the motion, but for the record, because it's naming Harry, but for the record, I want to have it noted that I do not agree that the structure under which we've set up was necessary to have created a conflict of interest. And I think we have the ability to separate it in a much better manner. But the question is not about the committee setup. The question is about whether or not, unless I'm understanding something wrong, that the question is about whether or not Harry would be an acceptable representative for the county.
Roll call, please.
I agree with Shirley.
Roll call.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Bernard?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Now you can do your acceptance speech.
I can give my acceptance speech. Water will flow. Yes. I have a question aboard. Do you want to go ahead and do this next item or do you want to take a break?
I want to take a break.
Okay. So we will take a break and be back at 30 after the hour. Thank you. Staff on this, please.
Chairman Ovitt and members of the board, I'm Bernita D'Ambrosio.
Thank you.
Okay. And this is Art Bacon from the Tax Collector's Office. We are here to present item C4, a temporary commercial outdoor entertainment license application for the event San Luis Obispo Symphony Pops by the Sea to be held at the Avila Beach Resort. In accordance with Title 6, Section 6.56 of the County Ordinance, the tax collector has determined the application to be complete and timely. This item is set for public hearing so the Your Honorable Board can determine that this temporary event will not be detrimental to the health, safety, or welfare of the public or property in the vicinity of the event. The departments responsible for investigating and reporting to your board are Planning and Building, Environmental Health, Public Works, and the Sheriff's Office. They have provided written recommendations to your board and have representatives here to answer any questions. Representatives for the applicants Infinite Horizons and San Luis Symphony are also present. After review of the application, along with testimony and other evidence provided, the county ordinance authorizes your honorable board to take one of the following actions: approve the application and authorize the tax collector to issue the license, or approve the applications with the conditions and authorize the tax collector to issue the license upon proof of compliance, or deny the application. A map of the event will be displayed on the screens for your reference. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions to the board? I have one, and all this I received notifications. When you're talking about conditions on this public health, or somebody now has down the number of honey huts that need to be used to test the conditions in here?
Right.
Okay.
They have been lowered.
All right. With that, I will ask, I guess, Sandy Segerson is representing the symphony, and she's going to speak on behalf of the applicant. And then we will go into the public comment. And Sandy.
Thank you, Honorable Board. My name is Sandy Segerson. I am proud to be the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo Symphony. At this time, certainly available for questions. We think our application is complete, and we're glad to hear that the Collector's Office agrees, and at this time I'd like to introduce Cindy Marie Absey, President of the Symphony Board of Directors.
Okay. We'll hold a question until she gets done then. Mm-hmm. Cindy?
Good morning. Morning, members of the Board of Supervisors. And I'd like to start with thanking you for the community project funds that you dedicated this morning to the San Luis Obispo Symphony. I know that you're used to seeing me in a different capacity, so it's going to be maybe a little discombobulating, but I'm really thrilled to be here today on behalf of the Symphony. The mission of the San Luis Obispo Symphony is to support an outstanding community orchestra, to foster symphonic and chamber music education, and to contribute to the cultural and economic vitality of the Central Coast community. To advance this mission, for the past 12 years, we have turned a golf course into a concert hall and have brought, the symphony and symphonic music to 3,000 families, friends, and neighbors at the Avila Beach Resort. We call it Pops by the Sea, and as you know, it has become a much-loved and well-loved tradition in San Luis Obispo County and is anticipated year-long. The concert promotes symphonic music by providing musical experience for folks that would not otherwise necessarily get such an experience. They are not necessarily subscribers to our concerts at the Performing Arts Center or the Clark Center, and it just really offers another venue for people to experience symphonic music in a wholesome environment. The event is, we're proud to say, affordable, family-oriented, well-organized, and safe. As for safety, safety is really a priority for our Pops concerts. We have an on-site ambulance with two paramedics. We have a first aid station. We have a bevy of volunteers that work around the clock to ensure the safety of all the attendees. There's a CHP officer that supervises traffic control, and I can assure you we are on top of it. We have a large group of supporters here today that are prepared as well to speak on behalf of the Pops concerts. And with that, I would like to once again thank the board for their contribution for the Pops buses and introduce Patty Thayer, our Executive Assistant Director. Patty?
Pardon me, I don't want to interrupt Patty, but I do want to ask if this is the correct process. We want to do what your board would have us do.
Is she still representing the
applicant?
The applicant?
As are about seven or eight other folks.
Well, then why don't we put them as public because they'll have their opportunity to speak. What I'll do now is board, Ms. Pinard, I think you had a question.
I'll hold them.
Okay. Is there anyone else has a question then of the applicant or staff? Ms. Bianchi?
Yep. I was daydreaming, unfortunately. How long has Pops by the Sea been? 12 years?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. These thoughts go through your mind. I said this is the only time that I'll ever even imagine having the baton to lead this whole group. So, with that, we're going to go to the public. And Sandy, unless you have anything else to say, okay.
I'm here to answer questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Again, most of you put in a request to speak form, and you do have 3 minutes. You don't have to take all that 3 minutes to tell us how much you appreciate the Pops, because I think we understand that. And we are dealing with a permit. So we'll start off with Dan Mannion, followed by Patricia Thayer.
Greetings, Your Honorable Board. Daniel Mannion. I urge you to approve this application for the Pops by the Sea. Pops started out at a horse ranch east of Templeton, went to the county fairgrounds in Paso Robles where it was very hot. I'd like to thank Rob Rossi for the wonderful venue at Avila Beach. And perhaps if we're here again next year, perhaps we could make this a ministerial process that could be done over the counter and waive the public hearing part of this. And I realize that your board is supports the arts, and perhaps we could ask you to waive the processing fees if you could. Thank you very much.
Don't get ahead of yourself. Patricia Thayer, followed by Carla Bittner.
I'm Patty Thayer. I'm the Assistant Director of the Symphony. I'm here to speak to the application process itself, which we've been working on for the past 2 months. It was a very daunting process. That being said, however, the Symphony has been able to respond thoroughly to this application, basically because almost all of the health and safety systems were already in place for the past 10 to 12 years. We've always had an on-site ambulance there in case of an emergency. We have a whole line of honey huts donated by Harvey and Jennifer Smith. We have CHP on site to direct traffic. We have 7 buses that come from all around the county to reduce the burden of parking in the community. We also have an incentive for carpooling, where 4 or more in the car park free. And we have a doctor on site with a medical tent for bee stings and that sort of thing. So we feel like we've been doing this for 10 to 12 years, and just filling out the application is what took the 2 months, which was a bit of a burden for an already overstretched staff. Moreover, one more thing. The Symphony does have a commitment to the community of Avila Beach. When Avila was deserted during the Unocal cleanup, we had many fears as to whether we could have a successful Pops concert out there. We were afraid that people wouldn't come because of the holes and the pounding and the smells and the noise. But the Symphony and the Avila Beach Resort stood by that community and held Pops concerts, reassuring the public that the massive cleanup project was only a transition and that Avila Beach would return to its position as a great destination for tourists and SLO County residents alike. To have to now defend our presence in Avila Beach is mysterious and a little sad. Thank you.
Thank you. Carla Bittner, followed by Becky Baer.
Thank you. My name is Carla Bittner. I live in Avila Beach, and I am the chairperson for the Avila Valley Advisory Council. The Avila Valley Advisory Council was established in 1974 and formally recognized by this Board of Supervisors in 1996. The resolution states that the board values the input of community advisory councils. In our bylaws, we are charged with the following: to advocate the interests of the residents of Avila Valley in public hearings, legal proceedings, and other civic decision-making processes related to land uses, zoning, public services, circulation, public improvements, and public safety. It would be inconsistent and negligent for AVAC not to have input in this public hearing, since the license application for a special event is on a 3-day holiday summer weekend, one of the 3 busiest weekends in Avila Beach. AVAC has stated in prior communications to this board that we support the Pops concert event and we support the approval of this license. As you all know, Avila is returning from a devastating time in its history. We are rebuilding downtown. AVAC has been a large part of that process, part and thanks to Ms. Pinard for her assistance. We are looking forward to the future when event impacts will be greater because of increased growth and use of town. Through all this, we continue to have concerns regarding the ability of all visitors to Avila to have acceptable access to Port San Luis, Avila Beach and the piers, and all businesses. Providing adequate on-site event parking is essential to minimize parking issues for beach visitors as well as residents in Avila Beach. We have one road in and out of Avila Beach. We must carefully consider traffic impacts for emergency access. Careful monitoring of traffic off-site, particularly at Avila Beach Drive and San Luis Bay Drive, will help all traffic move more efficiently to the event. All of Avila welcomes the Pops. We encourage everyone to enjoy our beautiful town and support our new businesses. After the event, a walk from the golf resort across the street is an opportunity to enjoy and see all that is new in Avila, including our new businesses that have opened. A ride to Port San Luis after the event is an opportunity to have dinner while traffic clears and access to out of Avila Beach is more acceptable. This event for Avila Beach is a win-win for everyone, and we support this event being in town. Our concern is based on everyone's safety during this weekend. On a personal note, I have served for 20 years as a volunteer in the public arena and have never been personally attacked as I was by a few spin artists last week. It saddens me that some choose to attack an individual and not issues, as is done in every other community I have served.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time.
Becky Bayer, followed by Brendan Morris.
Good morning. My name is Becky Bayer. I'm a resident of Arroyo Grande and a longtime supporter of the symphony and have enjoyed the Pops concert for many years. And I would like to defer my comments to the following video.
How long is the video?
3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. You realize we get to keep the video?
We do.
Thank you.
Brought in over $160,000.
We have a concert for the Pops, several thousand people. Today.
This'll be the day that I die. They were singing, bye, bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die.
Brendan Morris, followed by John Cribb.
Thank you, Board of Supervisors. My name is Brendan Morris, and I am a local business owner, third generation resident of San Luis, native of San Luis Obispo. And I'm here to speak a little bit about the impact, financial impact. As a current board member, I have been serving on the board now for 2 years, as well as I've been going to this event for many years and bringing my family. And right now, this financial impact is great, because what we are worried about is, even though we know that we respect the county's responsibility to the health and safety of all the citizens that attend these events out there, we're worried about the process. As we know, this process right now has been a little sped up with what we've done. We're worried about future years. We have to budget. This is our number one event, fundraiser for the whole entire symphony. And we're worried that this will change things dramatically. We don't know how we can budget for something like this so far in advance. We've obviously got to provide many things that we saw in the video here, as well as teaching children in music in the classroom, as well as continuing the inspiring music of all that we do in the halls. And we are worried that this will be a process that will continue each year, and we don't know whether we can be able to have approval from one year to the next. Finally, I asked for your support currently for this approval, as well as something that is good for both the county and all others, that we can put together a plan or program that we can have this approved each year on a better basis. Thank you.
Thank you. John Cribb, followed by Carol Dudley.
Hi, I'm John Cribb, and for 20 years I have been a very strong supporter of the performing arts in all of our communities. And as a realtor, I currently have commercial retail space on Front Street in Avila available for lease. So I have very much an interest in this issue.
You charge for advertising.
You do? Okay, great. I'll leave my cards. So I very much have an interest in this issue. I also am currently serving on the board of the Symphony. I'm also concerned about the process. I'm amazed at what's been involved in this application for an event and an organization that has a 12-year, very commendable record in putting this event on, and in spite of earlier comments, in the middle of a three-day holiday weekend at a high-occupancy time period. We have a great record of doing a wonderful job. I'm concerned because this application has been reviewed by the County Health Department, Public Health Department, the County Department of Planning and Building, the Sheriff's Department, the Tax Collector's Office, and your department as well has processed this, noticed the hearing, and coordinated all the paperwork. I fail to understand the need for this cumbersome process for this type of an event, and I realize we're in a limbo situation, but somewhere I hope this in this application that it raises a flag that you need to look at this process, because this is very unusual and I think highly unnecessary for this kind of event. So take a look at that. I know that you support the Symphony. I know you support Avila, as do we, but this seems like a very unnecessary use of public resources and our tax dollars at work on something that seems unnecessary to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Carl Dudley, followed by Linda Ashworth.
Good morning. I'm Carl Dudley. I am a resident of San Luis Obispo County and City of San Luis Obispo. You know, there's a lot of major events within the county that are held that probably have a bigger impact on crowds, on traffic, than what the POPS does. But as a fringe person going, I'm not a member of the board and of the Symphony, but as a person that does go and enjoy the Symphony since its inception at Avila, I do encourage you to approve the business use permit for this event. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Linda Ashworth, followed by Ursula Fitzgerald.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Linda Ashworth. I'm a Los Osos resident. I joined the Symphony 2 years ago when I moved to this county. I was delighted to be able to do so. And the first event I played with them with was the POPS at Avila. I was overcome with how well that event was organized from my perspective. I could drive into San Luis Obispo and board a bus, so I didn't have to drive. So they're providing transportation for Symphony members. They provide everything I could see as I looked at the event and compared it to previous symphonies that I had played with in the Bay Area was so well covered and so impressed me with their care and concern for putting on this event. I strongly urge you to approve this application, and I agree with the previous speaker that the need for a simplified method of ensuring that the safety needs and other issues are met in future years needs to be found somehow. Thank you.
Excuse me.
Before you leave, we have
what instrument do you play?
I play oboe and English horn.
Good. Ursula Fitzgerald, followed by Donna Keene.
Hi, I'm here to speak just on behalf. I'm the president of the North County Symphony Guild, and I would really like to impress on you how important it is for PAPS to continue. It is an event that's unusual to many events that the symphony has. It is for babies to anybody that can still get out of the house. So please make it not too difficult for us to have this event. Our organization supports the symphony. We are under the auspices of the symphony as a guild, and we support them in many different ways. I won't bore you with our mission statement, but it's basically the same as for the symphony, and it's a much beloved event, the Pops. I don't think I've missed any one of them, maybe the early. I've lived in this county for 15 years. It's truly a county symphony. A lot of people don't realize that. And all the members that I've contacted about this hearing today said, please convey that this is very important for the whole county and the families with small children especially. So thank you for consideration, and please help us out with this.
Thank you. Donna Keene, followed by Archie McLaren.
Good morning, supervisors. I'm Donna Keene, the Executive Director of Hospice of San Luis Obispo County. And every Memorial Day weekend, we have our annual fundraiser, Blues and Beer by the Bay, that's been generously hosted by Rob Rossi and Avila Beach Resort. We receive all income after expenses for our event, and it's a very, very significant income to our organization. And the value of being able to budget each year really helps us retain our no-cost services to clients in our community. So along with the other nonprofits mentioned on the video, please consider the impact for the whole nonprofit community. Thank you.
Thank you. And now here's Archie. Oh, I'm sorry. Archie McLaren, followed by Eric Greening.
Thank you, Harry.
The reason I do that is because the only thing I know you from is Avila Beach. So, you know.
Well, I hang out in Big Sur.
You get out in other circles.
I'm easy to find in Avila. The house is so unostensible. One of the things I wanted to make reference to was the comment that the last young lady made when she was up here, and that is the fact that it's critical for events to plan in advance. You simply cannot promote an event and create a net revenue that's of any significance whatsoever by not planning a year out. If you have a process that forces you to come in the month before an event, it's absolutely brutal trying to create something like that and making it functional. It's almost impossible. So my heart goes out to the Pops for having to deal with that today. And that brings up another thought, and that is that I'm concerned about the future of events in Avila Beach in general, because if this kind of process is continued throughout every kind of activity that takes place there, then people are going to be thinking of other venues to go. And we need this kind of activity in Avila Beach. We need to rebuild the business community. We rebuild the community by bringing people in. These events are wondrous. Everything from the blues to the Pops. I've served as president of the board of the Mozart Festival twice, and I like the eclectic array of music that Rob and the people who put on events over there put on. Carl Dudley, who spoke earlier, is not only just a person who's visible in the community as a businessman, but Carl has been the chairman of the board of Public Radio KCBX, which through the venue at the Avila Beach Resort over the years has earned revenues of close to $2 million. Public radio on the Central Coast only exists because that event kept it afloat for 19 years. And now they have other ways to try to accomplish that, but it's been a remarkable relationship between the Avila Beach Resort and Public Radio KCBX. So I would urge you to not think of people, and I'm not saying that Carla's doing this, because I know Carla has a constituency that she has to attend to, and she's very conscientious and a very nice person. And she's here representing the Avila Valley Advisory Council because that's her job. But I want to say that there are some people, and there's an undercurrent, that there are some people who would like to shut down events in Avila Beach altogether. This is something that we don't want. My house, as I said, sits on the hill overlooking the whole thing. I love it. It's part of the fabric of the community. It's exciting. It's exhilarating. It's energizing. We want these kinds of things to continue. We don't want somebody coming into the community like they might at an agricultural community and build a house and say, well, I built my house here now. You guys can't do agriculture here anymore. To me, some of this undercurrent is based on that kind of thinking. So please make the process viable and equitable and smooth for all of us who might consider doing events in Avila in the future. We need it desperately. Thank you.
Thank you, Archie. Eric Greening, followed by Jim Black. I'm sorry I didn't give you as much accolade as Archie. But
That's all right. Actually, I seem to have acquired a five-legged friend here on the way in. It doesn't make me part of any official applicant presentation. I'm actually with a different musical group, but the way cultural life works here is not necessarily the way gas stations or something else work. Our different musical groups are not competitors or rivals. We're all in this together, working together to build the cultural life of the community, and that's just the way it works. We feed each other and we nourish each other. I have no official connection with the symphony, and my only real connection is a very appreciative audience. But as you know, I do serve on the Citizens Transportation Advisory Committee, and I just, in relation to the impacts of events, I just want to give a special bouquet to the symphony because they consider the offering of free public transit to ticket holders as being an important part of this event. And I hope everyone out in the public is aware of that choice. They are doing everything they can to mitigate the traffic impacts by giving people alternatives. I wish we all had public transit between communities in this county on Sunday, but that's another problem for another day. The symphony has gone the extra mile in making sure that that choice is available for this event, and I hope that those buses will be filled because it's just a wonderful way to get there. I do want to end with a question. It's a musical question. Given that it appears that there will be five-legged audience members, I'm just wondering if any composer has written music that can be danced to by folks with five legs. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Black.
Good morning. My name is Jim Black, and I am on the board of the symphony, and I also represent the chairman of the Education Committee. And as you've heard, the process for the application for this event was onerous and certainly should be considered by the board, and we hope we'll give adequate attention there. But the other thing that I wanted to speak to this morning is that we are not the only event that takes place there. As you saw in the video, there are a number of charitable organizations that benefit by events that are held at the Avila Bay Club, and we just encourage the board to consider that in considering our application, that many different organizations benefit from holding their events down there. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak that has not done so? I didn't think you could sit back there all day. Mr. Rossi.
Thank you.
And give us your name, please.
Rob Rossi with the Avila Beach Resort. I just want to thank everyone who did speak today, and I think it shows the spirit of community that we've been able to be a part of in Avila, and I think everything that was said was relevant. I only wanted to fill in a couple of blanks. We do think that we've been doing things well for a long time, the symphony and others. We have one of the rare properties in the county that is zoned recreation, allowed for temporary and permanent ongoing uses such as this, and because of the land area involved, we can park it. We can't force people to park in our parking lot, and we try to encourage them by not charging if you come with a full car. But many do elect to come there now by the Bob Jones Bike Trail. They come by other cars and vehicles and park in Avila and enjoy the community and participate in the event. So we think in total it's gone very well. We've had well over 2 million customers, and to the best of our knowledge, there's never been any accidents or complaints, with the exception of one health department issue over a porta potty on a non-POPS event many years ago, and that was corrected. So we'd like to see not only the approval of this permit being requested today, but sort of, a reaffirmation or approval by the board of our ongoing activities that we basically entertain between 110 and 120,000 people a year at Avila Beach Resort. Three of those events do coincide with holidays, the Beer and Blues for Memorial Day, sometimes 4th of July, and certainly Labor Day. And like I say, I don't think there's ever been a traffic incident. We've paid close attention to monitoring the highways. We always have the Highway Patrol and the Sheriff's Department involved, as well as CDF and other medical facilities. So if I can address anything, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Anyone else that wish to speak? Seeing none, come forward, please. Give us your name.
Hello, my name is Robert Caron. I am a saxophone instructor at Cal Poly, and I've had the pleasure to play with the symphony a couple of times since I've moved to the area. Something I'd like to mention about the video that you just saw, something that you may all have noticed, is the fact that these events, including the Municipal Symphony events, bring out a lot of children, families, and I think it gives families a very important sense of community. It is important to have events that bring people out, not just for, you know, rock and roll events and tractor pull events. I think these events, nothing wrong with that, but cultural events are a plus here. They're needed. We all talk about how much schools are losing music and arts, but now these are maybe what's left for children of this community. And I think it is very, very, very important. I am an educator, as I said, and I work with children a lot. If we give children nothing or not much in schools, these might be the last remaining things we can offer them in the ways of, you know, music, pops music, classical music. And remember, these children are our next audience. If we don't give them anything now, in 10 years, we won't have much to give them and to give ourselves as well. And who knows, even if they become doctors, lawyers, city councilors, they may not become musicians, but they will have an appreciation of music because of what they saw at the San Luis Obispo Symphony Concert at Avila Beach. So my suggestion is to keep this process easier. Keep this venue open for the symphony and other organizations who want to bring music and different kinds of music to the community. It's the most important thing. And I think music and arts at Avila Beach might be something that could, I think in this weird time in the country, unite people instead of divide them. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else, then we'll close the public hearing, bring it back to board. Ms. Pinard.
Yes, thank you. And I'd like to thank everybody for coming. This is a fantastic event. But the issue here is actually even bigger than that, and many of you have raised those concerns. So I'd like to deal with this on a little bit broader issue that will cover the POPs as well. You mentioned the problem with the process. I don't know why it was a problem to give birth dates, places of birth, social security numbers for all such persons involved. And obviously I'm being pretty tongue-in-cheek when I say that. Obviously, if a item requires this kind of detail for what you're presenting, we're spending more of your time in trying to fill this form out than in doing the very valuable service that you need to do, is just organize all the musicians and get the type of things that you've been taken care of. It's not like you have a plethora of staff to be able to use on this.
Correct.
So I want to address that, because these are some things that we've had happen in the community that have been what makes our place special. And I want to be sure that I address the issues that AVAC has brought up as well, and that is that we have had the alternate transportation there, which has been great. It's worked. I've been to the POPs and many of the other events, and they've been working really wonderfully out there. So what I'm understanding is two things. One is, this is an application process. This is the first time that it's come forward, so this is the first time we've really been able to kind of address this issue at this location. And I'd like to make a couple of suggestions. One is that we saw the number of agencies that are served, everything from hospice to whatnot. And I don't expect, nor do I think the board is expecting, that each one of them would have to go through this level of detail in an application, number one, per organization. You need to fill out some of it that you have some of the safety things done, but the level of detail, I think, is beyond what is necessary or even requested, because for every bit that you put in, we've got to hire somebody to read it. So it works both ways to help us both out. The other thing I think that hasn't been mentioned is that when a business allows for all of the nonprofits, and I won't go through them all that were up there, but there has to be then the component of where do you make the money to handle the generosity for being able to allow the premises to be used for the nonprofits. So what I see, what is before us, is what is the permitting process for events at Avila, both profit and nonprofit? And because either we're going to go through this on every event, or we're going to come up like we do with most applications, is what are the guidelines and what are the general parameters, and then deal with it as a single unit and then be able to provide that kind of guidance for the rest. That.
Excuse me. I'm going to ask the person who's using the camera over there to kind of quell it down a little bit. Some of the board members are beginning. Thank you. Was that it?
No. I'd like to suggest that we do the process, number one, the application be allowed to be a lot simpler. If you're having medical coverage or security, that you just mentioned the name of the security firm that you've hired. I don't need the birth date and Social Security number of every person, and if XYZ security company wants to change out its people, they should be allowed to do that if someone calls in sick without anybody being able to be accused of violating a permit. Okay, so the questions that should be asked need to be more general in nature so that we've covered the security issue, the porta potty issue, or whatever, with basically who you've hired to do it, not 50 pages of everybody who's got, you know, an aunt and uncle involved. The other is I'd like to have the permit process cover, let me make a couple of suggestions and see if the board is in concurrence. I know that it, as I mentioned, the economic, it takes a lot for allowing these kinds of events to go on. So I would like the general permit under which all of these would occur to be allow for as many four profit or regular concerts that the activity might have as they allow at the nonprofit. Otherwise, what's going to happen is you're going to take up all the slots and there won't be anything for the regular business. So that will only turn back to start saying no to some of the nonprofits, and I don't want that to happen. So in order to allow yours to be able to be yours and Hotline and KCBX and everyone else, that perhaps the formula that would be appropriate for this permit would be as many nonprofit as profit. At least that sounds like one would be able to pay for the other. And I'd like to put that out and maybe hear if there's any other comments and then be able to roll them all into a motion.
Let me clarify one thing. Today we're dealing with this permit. And I understand in conversation with other members and the public that there are procedure and policy issues about this permit process that are in question, and I think we can make a separate motion to give direction on that. So what I'd like to do is, because these people are anxiously waiting to see what we're going to do,
yeah,
is to kind of keep ourselves to this permit process and then get that out of the way, and then let us basically, I think what we've got to do is refer the staff the whole ordinance issue and set a time period and bring that back. Now, with that, Mr. Ryan?
Yeah, I think you'll find by the time we get done for everybody waiting that we're going to okay this license. But I think that what we're discussing here and what really needs to be discussed is the license and how it works. Now, if I have this right, this was an ordinance was put in place back in 1969, and it's for gatherings of over 3,000 people. Is that correct? Okay, and then there's numerous parts of this ordinance. It was put together in 69, and then it was as a temporary emergency, whatever, and then it was put in place in 74. I know some of this stuff because when they put it in place in 1969, they were having Woodstock West just up the road from my place out in Creston, and that's what actually brought this ordinance together back when. But how many times has this ordinance been used over the years? How many times have we bumped up against where somebody is actually going over this 3,000 and has to use the ordinance?
This is the first time that I'm aware of.
This is the first time you're aware of.
There was one other application.
I thought there was another application somewhere along. But this ordinance was put in place back in 69 for a specific instance, is what it was trying to get. Well, 69 was a few years ago. And at the time, property was zoned undesignated, and the county and enforcement agencies and different things didn't have the tools that they have today to look at land use. And so my question is this ordinance obsolete? And should we have this ordinance in place whatsoever? Because if you look down at things that they're asking the applicant to do, and you're talking about potable water and toilets and fire protection and communication systems and tons of stuff that they have here, we have in our ordinances requirements on that. You can't run out into the hinterland and go out on agricultural land and have 3,000 or 10,000 people out there, not because of this ordinance, because of zoning regulations and numerous other things that you're going to have to address. So is this ordinance something that we really need? And then you look at where it is on Avila Bay. And what's Avila Bay zoned as? It's zoned as recreational and is visitor serving. So should it not be a deal where they have X amount of very large events a year, and then also what they're zoned for is community serving? And is this ordinance necessary, and should we use it under policies we already have? They already have permit to do business out there and to serve the public in different ways. Should that not be addressed in that rather than have this ordinance that somebody can pull out of the woodwork? Now, there was a comment about planning, and it's hard to get through this in a 30-day deal. I just had the clerk pull up the ordinance. And it says in the ordinance that you have to apply no less than 60 days prior to your event. It doesn't say that you can't apply 360 days before your event. So as far as planning, you know, in any time, and I've been involved in many ongoing type events that you do once a year, the day after you finished the event, you're planning next year's event.
You can count on it, sir.
Yeah.
Sandy, you don't need to sit.
And so you can actually go forward, and instead of getting caught in this time crunch, whether it be Pops or anybody else, go out there ahead of time and apply for these permits way out ahead of time, whether it be something that's not going to be under this ordinance but something that Avila Bay is going to have. It needs to be done way out ahead, not where it is right now. But my comments are going to be to approve this license today, and then I would like to direct staff to – I'm not making a motion. It's just comment. And then I would like to direct staff to bring us back a possible abolishment of this ordinance and show us how our other ordinances actually fill in and cover it.
All right. Let us do this. Let us get a motion on the
application.
Okay. Ms. Pinard, do you have that?
I'd like to make a motion. There are a lot of other little bits. Mike certainly brought up the underlying bit of it, so we'll deal with one to let everybody breathe.
Let me say one thing. I fully understand, and I think the next motion after this should be to direct staff to bring this ordinance back for a full discussion. I don't think that we can do justice today and then not have everything in front of us to bring it back. And I'm not trying to shortcut everybody, but I think that we'd be better focused if we had all the information in front of us on these ordinances and do that.
I'll second the motion to approve the license.
Yes, thank you.
Ms. Pinard, seconded by Mr. Ryan. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Yes.
Aye.
I would like to.
I didn't want to have to ask for the money back for the transportation. In case
I would like to raise a couple of other issues, though. The one about the
ordinance. Let's keep it brief because we're going to bring this back to the board. I think I feel the board saying that, and we're going to have a bigger discussion.
But we have two parts to that. One is we have a lot of other organizations that are going to be wanting to come under this before we ever get around to doing an ordinance change. So that's why I would like to make the second part of the motion similar to what we do for other requests. Usually we have a request from – we've seen many of them from wine owners or wineries for a permit to have events. And that's also what's in this application. It's a permit with the individual stipulation for POPs, but also this is the issue of the permit for the Avila Beach resorts. So I'd like, while we're, the third part of this would be to go back and look at the ordinance, but you're going to have a lot more people coming through looking for permits while we're getting this ordinance redone. So I would like the second motion to be that as we're giving this for POPs, it also covers the other nonprofits that have been traditionally served.
Second.
And let's get that much
out. We need an understanding here because there's only been one other time that I know of that this ordinance has ever come forward.
I'm talking about general permit because that's what we're looking for here.
I think what you're doing in making that motion is there's no definition to who we're talking about. And I think we dealt with the POPs right now because of the urgency of the issue. Get it out of the way. I don't see that this ordinance is going to be applying to anything coming up
in the next 60 days.
And I think that what we need to do is tell staff we get back in a certain amount of time period with revisions to this ordinance, and let's do that discussion. Because there's an issue here that I have also heard that if we start putting this together like we do with wineries or this kind of stuff, and because this particular venue happens to be within the Coastal Commission, we give it to our favorite people over there to make a final decision, and it's out of our hands. And that may not be the thing that would allow even 60 days to get done. So
I'm ready to
Can I just comment on that part? This does get back to what, Mike, you were saying before. People will be coming in for permits under the license to be able to have events there, and they have to already qualify for what the staff will require of them. So what I'm trying to do is not tie the other organizations to our consideration of the license, but be able to know already that when any, say, hospice comes in and wants to hold an event, any event, even less than 300, it doesn't require a coming before this board for a special permit. It actually can be handled under a general permit that they have to give this information to staff. Staff will then sign it off. Right now there is no license out there. Everything that's been happening has been happening over a length of time. So this issue of challenging whether or not there is an original permit is what the issue is, and that's what I'm trying to clear up.
But this permit only takes place once it clicks over 3,000 people. All other activities do not require a permit, but there is certain involvements with public safety and public health at these other events. Let me go to Ms. Pinar, or Ms. Bianchi. She's been waiting.
I'm not waiting. I want to make a motion. And the motion is based.
No, there is a motion on the floor with a second right now. Right. I'm sorry.
Well, that was to. You have to repeat the motion because that was.
Well, I'm still trying to understand that motion. Okay. What I understood the motion is that you're basically asking for general approval of any other applications that come in between now and the time that that your board considers any ordinance changes, that they be treated at the staff level and not come back to the board for an overall approval at this level. Is that what I heard you say?
Right, for the nonprofits.
We'll start with that.
The reason that I think this is going to be needed is it's going to take longer to get any ordinance back, for one. The other question is, even though you're talking about 3,000 as a trigger, some other events could be wanting more than 3,000. And I think this is a very nebulous area where you say, well, are you expecting 2,500 and 3,000 show up? We've got all of this nebulousness there now. And one of the things that has been challenged in Avila is whether or not there's a general permit to even have events there. So I want to clear that up. So while we do our ordinance, the issues of any permit that comes forward will go to AVAC, but it'll be done. This process will not happen at the board level. It'll happen at the ministerial level between staff, AVAC, and the applicants.
Then let me ask one more point.
Let me get Mr. Hand in on the conversation.
Can I just ask about
Mr. Euphrat? Mr. Euphrat.
John Euphrat, planning staff. Maybe just to add just a tiny bit of information to what Supervisor Bernard said, there is a need to provide direction, I think, to staff as it relates to this particular property. It's had a long history. It's a good history. And as you can tell by the support here from the audience, as well as I think all of the county departments recommended approval of the license today. What is a little bit unclear is the permitting history in the past. Now, I should point out first that in terms of the agenda item today, it is strictly limited to the business license, but I want to, if we can get a little bit of direction for future administration, that would be helpful. And I think if the applicant were given an opportunity, he would want to be able to persuade you on, there's a certain number of units, a certain number of events that have occurred on this property, probably somewhere between the range of 4 and 8 that have occurred traditionally over the last 20 years that the applicant strongly believes are grandfathered in and should not have to go through this process, including the POPs event, which we're hearing today. I think after examining the record, we reviewed a lot of material, and we feel there is a case for the nonprofit fundraising events. I'm not so clear on the for-profit standalone concerts that there is a strong track record. So if the board wanted to address that issue, I think potentially up to 3 to 4 of these events per year could be considered.
Let me get into one point on this thing. We received a letter from Mr. Walters representing...
Correct.
And his statement in there is that they already really have an open-ended situation that allows temporary events, which is an environmental report and everything else. So the issue of this particular motion is not necessary because he's already allowed to do that. But we have other issues that kick in that require public health issues that, you know, you cannot serve food out there. I mean, there's a whole litany of other things that kick in. And I think what I'd like to do now, if I can, is go to Mr. Lindholm because he's...
The way for the board to proceed to accomplish your objective would be to first consider the ordinance and decide whether or not you want to repeal it or amend it. And if you're concerned with making the rules clear with respect to the Avil Beach Resort, that you set that for a hearing and have the planning department report on what the issues are and how you would go about assuring that they were allowed to have the particular activities that you would like them to have. So the two steps would be, first, change the ordinance, and second, have a hearing to consider the status of activities at the resort.
Can I ask a question of County Council?
Go ahead, and I want to get this motion off.
Well, I'm glad to see that you agree with that there's a couple of steps here that needs to be done, because I think unless people have been dealing with this issue, it can get all rolled into one. The question of whether or not there is a permit, the current ability, and the letter by Mr. Walters was referenced. And while we may agree with that perspective, the question has been raised. The thing that we can do today is to give direction about that we agree that that is the case and therefore no step may be necessary. Or what I think staff was looking for is for the board to make a better statement about what its understanding and clarification is, so they have some marching orders for the immediate future.
The second item wasn't on the agenda for today and may require other ordinance amendments. But the significant factor here is that as long as you have this ordinance in its current form, if you're going to have this type of activity attended by over 3,000 people, the ordinance is going to prohibit you from doing what you indicate you'd like the resort to be able to do.
Okay. Let's get this motion.
So we do need to get to the ordinance.
Yeah, that's right, correct.
With that, call that question on the motion, but especially because I think for this point we don't know how long the ordinance will take, and I believe that for the nonprofits, at least we can relieve that burden that they're not going to have to go through this for each item that they come
Madam
forward
Clerk,
with.
Madam Clerk, do you understand the motion now?
I'm getting close.
Right. Get a clarification because
what I'm understanding is that this is specific to the Avila Beach, the Avila Resort property, and not anywhere else in the county, and only the nonprofits in this area and the application process, right? Okay.
All right. We have a motion on the floor. Roll call.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ryan?
No.
Mr. Ovitt?
No.
All right, the next motion I'd like to make is
wait a minute. I have other people that had before you, Mr. Ryan, and then Ms. Bianchi.
The comment I wanted to make is I would like to see this abolished, but I don't want to abolish it until we make sure there is a pathway for these people to come through. The other thing is they can apply 64 days ahead of their event. So anyone who's going to have those events, look at those licenses, and you've got to be over 3,000, so there's very few of them. And I think the thing that needs to be looked at is we need to direct staff to work with Avila Bay Estates on the amount of
whether it be profit or nonprofit things, that they're going to have. Leave the ordinance in place until we've got another pathway to go through and then use that pathway.
Okay, Ms. Bianchi, you said you had a motion.
Right. Based on the discussions from both the public and this board today, I would like to make a motion to direct staff to return to the board in a quickly reasonable period of time with a...
You need to find that.
With a, well, they know what I mean. Yeah. With a report to us on the options that are available to us in this, in our deliberations, and also at that time to bring back our options on the ordinance to either eliminate it completely, to modify it, or to come back with a whole brand new ordinance. And that's the, those would be the options, not the ordinance itself.
Okay. There's movement by Ms. Bianchi, seconded by Mr. Ryan. Clerk, have the motion.
Yes.
We have a roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mr. Ryan.
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard.
Aye.
Mr. Shajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Could I just add one thing?
Ms. Pinard.
Yeah. When we mentioned about what avenues there may be for dealing with this, we do have those already. If they want to have an event, what I was trying to make sure is that it only had to go through staff, not through the board as well. You put on any event in this county, and you need to comply with certain health and safety regulations. So I didn't think there was anything missing.
I want to make one clarification on my motion. I should have said it at the very beginning, so listen, Mike, because you may want to change it. This is countywide.
Yeah.
Avila is not the only seaside-based community. I have three in my district, four, five, if I want to count them all up. So we need to be sure that it complies with the Coastal Act and also with Title 22.
Because the only other time this was applied for was inland, and it was for a Willie Nelson concert at Archero. And that's the only two times in our history of this county this thing's been applied for. And so I think the motion's clear, the direction, staff, you have. And I would only add to it that possibly what you'd want to look at is a good 90 to 120 days to try to get this back on the agenda. Okay, if we can do that. Garassi?
Excuse me for a second. As you have heard today, these are ongoing activities. I think there's two or three this month. I think a high school band deal that's coming up, and I don't have all the specifics. But, you know, we've been here today under the license to go over 3,000. There's only been two instances in our past when we went over 3,000, and it was, you know, with at least the knowledge of the county saying it wasn't a big deal back then, so we didn't apply. But all of our other events have been under 3,000, and we just wanted to make sure that we're not asked to do anything further. I think Mr. Freitas has made a good point to me on the side here, as he's made in the past. We have those two business licenses that were referred to in the in our letters to you. One of them, the food and beverage one, could easily add the word entertainment, as does our ABC license already. And I think it takes care of the events under 3,000 and allows them to continue without a permit process. As you've heard today from the POPs, but it's true with all the events, we do the same procedures. We have the ambulance, we have the CDF, we have the sheriff. So there, whether it's a golf tournament or a music event, we handle them the same.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I can attest to those others, too. With that, then, we have given staff direction on it. That concludes this particular item. With that, is there anyone in the audience who wants to make public comment on closed session items as per the agenda? Seeing none, we're going to go into closed session. Thank you, everybody, for coming, and we will return at 2 o'clock.
Impacts associated with new residential development in the South County area through the funding of local programs intended to improve air quality. The program includes several pollution-reducing strategies, such as providing transit improvements in the Napomo area, which would include improvements for two bus turnouts and associated improvements, such as the shelter, signage, and paving turnout that is shown back here. I'm sorry, where did that go? Did I lose it? Yeah, it's right here. I'm sorry, right there. current bus stop on the frontage road needs to be moved, and an interim location has been identified on East Teff Street, as shown on this graphic in red. Another strategy is the construction of a park and ride lot that is going to be either near the Los Barrios interchange or the future Willow Road interchange. To reduce particulate matter, another strategy is the paving of a couple of existing dirt roads that are not otherwise planned for paving in the foreseeable future. The unpaved section of Sannydale is proposed for funding as a part of this update. The paving of Aiden Hetrick segment is connecting Summit Station to Pomeroy is proposed for postponement until the anticipated right-of-way issues are resolved. The program includes the installation of several bike lanes within the Napomo area. The red dash lines show what already exists. The blue lines coming up here show what is existing in the air quality program, and the yellow line at the top is what is being proposed to be added, which would be a bicycle connection to the new high school. Application of information technology is another strategy included in the program to reduce trips. The local library was previously used with the installation of a computer and high-speed lines. Rideshare awareness is another strategy included in this program, which would involve installation of kiosks or billboards advertisement related to the rideshare program. An additional component of the transit strategy for school bus replacement is being proposed, where a couple of older, dirty diesel engine Lucia Mars school buses would be replaced with new clean-burning diesel buses that have routes in the South County area. Based on the calculated air quality benefits for items that have already been completed, namely the clean-burning transit bus, paving of Burton, and the installation of electronic services at the library, the program has removed significant amounts of air pollutants in the South County area. The funding highlights of this update are as follows. As I mentioned, Aiden Hetrick's status is deferring it to the next update until the right-of-way issues are resolved. Sannydale is recommended for funding this year. Replacing one old diesel fuel district bus now, as well as replacing one in the future. Reserving transit allocation funding, RTA is expected to have a permanent site identified by the next update, and since this was a previously authorized to expend funds and being a high priority strategy, staff is recommending the reservation of the funds to ensure availability at the next update. And lastly, that there is a proposed fee change due to the 3 years of inflation and existing programs that are and the changes to the existing programs already discussed. The fee is proposed to increase from $166 to $199 for single-family residences and from $100 to $123 for multifamily units. It is recommended that your board approve the annual update and adopt the resolution for the annual update. And that will conclude my presentation. I'm available for any questions. And there, I believe there were going to be several technical committee members in the audience. I think there's one or two raising their hands out there. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Sargent?
The old bus, what are we replacing it with? The school bus, diesel?
It's a clean-burning diesel.
Okay. And what's happening to the old one?
I don't know. It will not be a part of the school district's bus inventory. It would be sold to some, and I don't know the specifics to where it would go.
But it would be out of this county?
Yes. Thank you.
Probably parked alongside the road. No. Bernard.
Harry, we've got to get this right.
Got to have a name tag.
I know. Let me forward.
I'll get it.
One of the issues regarding South County is that so many things don't, and in North County too for that matter, don't end right at the county's line. And the Santa Maria Refinery affects a lot of what happens in South County. When we do something that's called like a South County air quality, wouldn't we take in some of the other major issues and then just make sure that all of it's kind of put together so we know where we stand as far as air quality? Because when we look at these, we've got the roads, and this is not problematic, but when we talk about what is the air quality in South County and what impacts it. It seems like we should have at least our an awareness side of it about what else is a major impact in that area.
It's my understanding, and I don't know if APC reps are here. It looks like she had a doctor's appointment. Briefly, what I understand, there as a part of the permitting of that facility, a number of upgrades were required to improve the air quality that was or air pollution, reducing air pollution out of the stacks from the facility, scrubbers and the like. And so it's kind of following its own separate processing path, and APC has required that a number of improvements be made to bring it into compliance and
improve air quality. Well, I know from a recent APCD meeting, there was conversation that they may or may not be meeting that. And as it impacts the South County air quality, we should certainly have it always be part of the picture because it's huge. And the amount it's putting out every evening is just visible for right over the saddle at Avila, you can begin to see what's coming out of that. So I don't want to make an assumption that just because it's being regulated by another agency that somehow we don't keep a handle on it, especially in terms of total reporting. There may be some issues that we need to be compensated for in our county if there's a certain level of pollution being allowed, and yet our people are the ones who have to breathe it.
And I can certainly work with APCD as a part of the next update to incorporate that discussion.
I think we got the chicken and egg issue here because the APCD deals with the permitting process of those facilities. And this particular program was based on residential and
that's true too.
Traffic issues, which is a specific area that is dealing with, different than what APCD and their air pollution plan is.
That is a good point.
Any other comments? Seeing none, we'll go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to make a presentation? Seeing none, we'll bring it back.
Move staff's recommendation.
Moved by Mr. Sizen, second by Ms. Bianchi. All those in favor, signify by
roll call.
Roll call.
Mr. Sizen?
Aye.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Thank you.
With that, thank you. With that, we'll go into item C6, Madam Clerk.
Item C6 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Dan Russell on behalf of Creston Citizens for Ag Land Preservation of the Subdivision Review Board's decision to approve parcel map CO03-0253, allowing the reconfiguration of two existing parcels into three parcels using a lot line adjustment with a concurrent division and purchasing one transfer development credit. And this is in the 5th District. This item was continued from August 3, 2004. Recommendation is for denial.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, John Bissell, County Planning Staff. This item, as was said, was continued from August 3rd with a recommendation that the appeal be upheld, the decision of the Subdivision Review Board be disapproved. So we're turning now with findings for that and a resolution to uphold the appeal and reverse the decision of the Subdivision Review Board on this project.
Okay. This was an appeal at that point. And I see the appellant or the appellant's representative. Or do you still represent the appellants? Did you want to say anything on this? Okay. And I don't see the applicants in the audience, so we will go to the public. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening. I urge your approval of these findings and this consequent denial of the appeal. My only regret is that these excellent findings weren't found at the very beginning of the process by staff when it was taken to the Subdivision Review Board. And actually, I'm pleased to see that similar findings have been made in other TDC, proposed TDC receiver sites in agricultural land since that time. So perhaps we're all on a learning curve. But these findings are very much in alignment with existing general plan policies. And so I do urge your approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. Mr. Ryan.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Ryan.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mrs. Pinard.
Aye.
Mr. Sajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye. Should we take our break now? Or
just for the people listening, the staff recommendation was to uphold the appeal and disapprove the application.
Right.
the reason I said that, I don't see anybody in the audience for C7. Is there any, are they outside?
Can go on.
We can go on? Mm-hmm. You want to go ahead and read it? Because I don't even know if staff's here yet. Staff's here? Okay.
Your next item is item C7. This is a hearing to consider an appeal by James Pudwell and Greg Nestor of the Planning Commission's denial of a vesting tentative tract map and conditional use permit for a clustered subdivision and submittal of a revised tentative tract map located in the residential rural land use category on the South County planning area. This is in the 4th District. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal and approve the revised project.
Okay. We'll go ahead then, Mr. Lopes, if you want to go ahead and give a staff report on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Lopes in Department of Planning and Building. We noticed that, as well as you did, the applicant isn't present at this time. I can speak very slowly, or I'll just go ahead at the normal pace.
Why don't you do staff's report, and then we'll see who's here.
Okay. The applicant, Greg Nestor, has appealed the Planning Commission's denial of a vesting tentative map and conditional use permit for a clustered subdivision, and after appealing, has submitted a revised tentative tract map. And I'm waiting for the slide to change. There. The Planning Commission denied the original proposed map on the basis that the agricultural use of the site was not a qualifying resource for granting a reduction in the size of the required open space parcel. And I'm just briefly going to go through this. The applicant has obtained a preliminary authorization to provide an on-site small community water system, which would enable smaller residential parcels to be used, and therefore a larger open space parcel that would qualify under the land use ordinance. So the applicant revised the tract map to propose a conforming open space parcel and smaller residential lots. With the revised map, staff can recommend approval of that map, and at the same time, though, we need to deny the original appeal and then modify the decision of the Planning Commission to approve the revised map, subject to the conditions of approval. And the property is in the residential rural land use category south of Willow Road on the Napomo Mesa. It's at the corner of Don Road and Sundale Way, the northwest corner. It's a 40-acre parcel that is currently used for berry crops. Before 2000, it was in an ag preserve contract that was non-renewed. The property is surrounded by large lot development, except on the right, on the east side, is a large cluster subdivision, the Knollwood subdivision. And that property has open space adjacent or across from the site on Sundale Road. This gives you some idea of the extent of activity in summer 2003 on the site. Since then, the applicant, co-applicant James Pudwell, has continue to intensify farming berries on the site. The original proposed map had 2.85-acre parcels, and those parcels were leaving a small open space parcel, actually smaller than the 24 acres required, but it was only a fraction smaller. And the open space parcel requirement of 24 acres was only 1.46 acres more than would be required. So the applicant asked for the Planning Commission to authorize a reduction in that parcel size based on a South County Area Plan standard. With the review, the Ag Commissioner recommended an ag buffer from the open space lot, which will have berry farming. That's a 200-foot buffer. During the environmental review, the visual resources of the area were considered important enough to ask for mitigation measures to avoid significant visual impacts of 2.5-acre lots in an area that has large lot development. And that approach led to an additional map sheet that the applicant is proposing. It has designated building sites. It has somewhat consolidated driveways. It has a landscape plan. and the fence lines in the fronts would be minimized to the facades of the buildings. Because the applicant has revised the map, the 2.5-acre parcels are just a fraction smaller with the same layout. The open space parcel now qualifies at 24 acres. So with that change, the staff can recommend that your board approve the negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, uphold the Planning Commission denial of the originally proposed tract map 2384, and then approve revised tract map 2384 based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B. That concludes the staff report. Be glad to answer any questions you have.
Okay, Mr. Sajjan, we'll go to Mr. Bianchi.
A few questions, if I may. How close is this from NCSD?
Just across the street. NCSD boundary is at the west edge of the Knollwood tract.
If the applicant was to go to 2.5 acres per lot, what size is the open space? You said there's a fraction.
Yeah, it was 22.38 acres, so it was basically 1.62 acres smaller than the required 24 acres.
Okay. So in order to keep the open space as what it's supposed to be, what size then the lots would come?
To have a 24-acre open space parcel, the applicant has reduced the parcels to, I think, 2.3 acres.
Okay.
Roughly.
And is that discretionary, or is it in black and white? I'm looking for council input. Is that something we can?
Well, it's required by the ordinance. They could always come in for a variance or something, but it's an ordinance requirement. The amount of acreage for the open space parcel.
They have to come forward for a waiver, or we can.
They would have to make an application for a variance. It's not just a waiver. So I would say it's an ordinance requirement. It's not an area where there's discretion.
We need clarification.
A question on that, though, that, and I did have a conversation yesterday with a gentleman. The issue is that if it's 2.3 acres, then he has to have a community well because it's less than 2.5 acres.
That's correct.
And I was thinking where Mr. Sajjan's going to is not necessarily a waiver on the 2.5 and the 24, but possibly a waiver on a community system to allow them to go ahead and put well and septic on each of those lots. Mm-hmm. Even though they're 22.3 acres, which is, you know, you got roads and everything else in the middle of it that Net could, you know, could arguably said would be more.
Well, the original map did have the smaller open space parcel and had the required 2.5 acre residential parcels. The applicant utilized a South County Area Plan standard that enables the open space parcel to be reduced if important biological, physical, or historical resources on the site are protected. With that standard is a requirement that a study be done to indicate the extent of the resources, their importance, and so on. The applicant just provided information about the agricultural use and indicated that agriculture on the site had continued for a long time, was intensifying, and that should qualify as an important historical resource on the site. We went through an analysis of the county's policies on agriculture versus open space resources, went through the analysis of whether the agriculture on the site is considered important in the eyes of the Ag Commissioner, whether it's thought of as production agriculture. And we found negatives on both counts, that the county's agriculture and open space plan indicate agriculture as a business, not a resource. It's a business that relies on resources. The Ag Commissioner thought that this site didn't have the acreage that was really what they would call production agriculture or an important site. So we reluctantly recommended denial, noting that changes could be made to the map to use community water. We supported that from the beginning of the application. We were able to have the applicant work with the NCSD to get a final decision on the longstanding application he had to them for annexation, which was held in abeyance by the Sphere of Influence study for Napomo. And that was resolved this late spring. And the site is within the sphere now, and it wasn't before, but it is in the sphere. It's adjacent to the NCSD, and it can be annexed once a couple of major tasks are completed by the NCSD.
See, that's why I think, since it's so close to NCSD, instead of having a mutual water company to serve all the seven units, if there was a problem, if the applicant can go on 2.3 acres, have individual wells, and don't mess around with the open space acreage. And that, if we can't do that.
We can't, yes, that's correct, because the ordinance really doesn't have a waiver provision to reduce the residential lot size below 2.5 acres. It only speaks to having a reduction of the open space parcel. If you need
that way around.
It only has an exception for reducing the open space parcel. And it doesn't allow reducing the residential parcel.
There is more benefit for the community from the size of the open space, and I would have thought it would have been in reverse rather than have a smaller acreage of open space and larger, where I think going down to 2.3, you can have a better project, less landscaping with all the water problems, things of that nature. Okay. I'll see what others have to say.
Ms. Pinky and Mr. Rank.
James?
Yes, thank you.
On page C74, very top paragraph, top of the page, the last sentence states, the applicant has agreed verbally to accept this condition. The applicant either has to have that in writing or agree to it verbally on the record here at the microphone.
Yeah.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying.
That's an important point.
I don't know these folks, so I'm just saying that it has to be on the record somehow, in or on.
Mr. Ryan?
Well, if you approve it with subject to conditions, it doesn't make any difference if it's verbally or whatever, they have to abide by the conditions of approval.
Well, but if it's not, if they haven't agreed to that condition, they can come back. An applicant could come back later and say, well, I really didn't agree to that.
Yeah,
that's why it has to be on the record.
But it was a condition of your approval, so then you don't have a project. The comment I wanted to make on the water there, as far as the mutual, or looks like you're going after separate wells for each one of them, when the NCSD actually gets around to doing something in the future that may give them more water, and they may want to look at those little districts on the side of them and be able to merge them, I think it'd be better off to have the ones on the side with one well rather than five or seven wells out there, because I think you're more apt to work with the bigger system instead of operating your little one, go, yes, NCSD, we would like to work with you. And to go in and give up five wells is going to be harder than giving up one well. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I might, just to follow that point up, I think we agree with the Supervisor Ryan's approach in that because the site is in the sphere of influence and adjacent to the NCSD boundary, and because the applicant has wanted to obtain community water supply, we have found a way for that to occur where the applicant would work with the Environmental Health Division to have a small community water system initially until the site is annexed by the Napomo CSD. And at that time, then the applicant would not object to being annexed, or in fact could request annexation. And that is the condition that is in the staff report with today's recommendation.
Well, let's do this. As you know, the light's going, so let's go to the applicant appellant. Mr. Budwell, you're here. If you want to state your case on this.
Good afternoon. My name is James Budwell. I was not really prepared to do this. I don't know where Mr. Nestor is at, but and I'm not sure that I understand the total. There was a question that Ms. Bianchi asked that what needed to be clarified in person. What was that?
Do you agree to the, the Environmental Health Division has indicated that with the response by the NCSD that it will not entertain an annexation application. The division would allow an on-site system with the condition that the operator will seek and not object to annexation to the NCSD. So do you agree to that?
Yes.
Okay.
We have agreed to that.
Thank you.
And, of course, we have tried to deal with the NCSD for the last year and a half, unsuccessfully. And the options that Mr. Nestor has proposed, of course, I'm not sure which of the options the board is more inclined to go with, whether they would rather see a water company or see the 2.5-acre parcels with the, you know, the extended size of the open space that is being allowed on or maintained on the 2.5-acre parcels. We feel that's more than adequate for that 60-40 split that is required. And I don't, you know, I'm not a, I have let Mr. Nestor handle this whole thing, so I'm, you know, I have to apologize for not really being able to be very objective here.
Do you have his cell phone number?
I beg your pardon?
I say, do you have his cell phone number?
I have called him. He's on the way. Okay. So, yes, I have.
I was wondering if maybe we should take a break for a few minutes. And
well, let's see if others have anything to say. Then, if
go through the public.
Yeah, let's go to the public. And then if he hasn't shown up by that time, what we may do is suspend this for a few minutes, go into our next item, let that get done, and then carry on.
Okay, I appreciate that very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Is there anyone in the public who wants to speak to this? Since there is none and Mr. Nestor hasn't done, what I'd like to do is table this and take up item D1. And at the conclusion of D1, then we will finish item C7. Is that all right with the board?
Can I ask a question before we just table this so that I don't forget it? Following up on Cacho's comment about making sure that the public open space, I mean, it's funny that we have an exception in the law that says that it would allow it to come from the open space rather than saying we have an exception in the law that says that you can find that you can have smaller than 2.5. Is there anything to prevent us from making that finding that the open space parcel would remain as designated and then that the difference would come off of the individual lots?
That would be difficult for staff to recommend because the 2.5-acre minimum is based on the Regional Water Quality Control Board's basin plan, and that is the long-established minimum size for new parcels that have individual wells and septic systems. So to reduce below 2.5 would need a variance.
We need to discuss this when we may get Mr. Nestor involved in this. This is a question that is really going on. Does the board have the authority to make the findings that either you have the 24-acre open space with 2.5-acre lots, or you have 23-point-something open space with 2.5-acre lots. So,
2.3.
Yeah,
the first one was with 0.3.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think with that, though, until we get an opportunity to see if Mr. Nestor goes here, we'll table this for right now, and we'll go into item D1, and Madam Clerk, you're going to read that.
Item D1 is consideration of a report prepared by the U.S. Geological Survey on liquefaction susceptibility of the Oceano area related to the December 2003 San Simeon earthquake.
Great. Ella, I'll let you introduce our distinguished guest here.
Our distinguished guest is Lou Rosenberg. He's our county geologist. He's still is under contract to us as our geologist. It's going to take just a second to boot up he's shaking his head that it's all booted up on the computer. We have reports to hand out to you today, and Lou is ready to make a presentation.
Let's do that, and we'll get this other one going now. So go ahead, Lou.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning. Let's try that again. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I'm Lou Rosenberg, the county's engineering geologist. Today I bring you a report that I've been working on since December on the effects of the earthquake in the community of Oceano. What I'm going to do is we're passing out copies of the report. They will be on the internet this afternoon. The USGS will turn on the web server shortly. And I would like to try and explain this very technical report in non-technical terms as best I can. You are certainly free to contact me if you have questions about the report, but please let me try and explain a very complicated topic in a simple way. Okay. If we could have the PowerPoint up. Okay, here we are. Okay. This is a report that I co-authored with the U.S. Geological Survey. In addition to working for the county as their geologist, I also serve as a volunteer scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey. And this came about after the earthquake. The first day I spent in North County, my home, looking at effects. The second day, I went down to South County because I had heard rumors that there was extreme damage. And I was frankly astounded at the damage in Oceano.
50 miles away.
It was nearly 50 miles away. That's correct, Supervisor Ashadian. So let me explain what I found. Here you'll see a map showing the main shock near the town of San Simeon, and down at the bottom of the screen is the community of Oceano, nearly 50 miles away. And I think most people know that damage is somewhat proportional to distance from earthquake epicenters. The farther you get, the less damage. But yet, here in Oceano, there was a huge amount of damage and much less in the communities in between. So my first thought was, well, it's a coastal community. I wonder if they had filled in wetlands. And that was my first hypothesis. This is what drove it. I saw this is North Swing Avenue. You see the sidewalk surfing over the curb here. That is a shallow landslide. We call it lateral spreading. It's the hillside going down from Highway 1 into Oceano Lagoon, and that hill's slowly sliding into the lagoon. Scary stuff. What did we do? This is the value of networking. Being a volunteer scientist, I called my coworkers at the Geologic Survey. Said, you need to come down here. He said, no. I said, no, you need to come down here. They said, wow, this is cool. This is worth our trip down. And based on that, they decided that it was not only worth field mapping, but performing subsurface exploration with their special cone penetrometer truck. And the total cost of this effort on the USGS side was $200,000. That's what this would have cost if we had to have a consultant do this type of work. So they were very generous in sharing both their expertise and their financial resources. And I would like to acknowledge that. Okay, your Geology 101 lesson for today. I know everybody's heard of liquefaction, but let me try and explain with a simple cartoon what it is. You see on the left of a building sitting above the water table, and then on the right, after liquefaction, the ground moves and the building is twisted, and the definition is loss of strength and saturated soil during an earthquake. But think about it on a physical level. What's really happening is in dry soil, the grains of sand are butted against each other, and those edges are in contact. When you have an earthquake with liquefaction, water is pushed up by the shock waves from the earthquake, forcing those grains of sand apart. And what is the friction of water? Zero. And therefore, when the water goes between the sand grains and forces them apart, the overlying ground has zero strength. If you have a building on it, that can be a fairly serious thing. But also, being that we are an agricultural county, it does have an effect on farmland. These are what you see here, this gray area in the foreground, is called a sand boil. This is where sand actually comes up through the ground. This is the Cardoza Ranch next to Arroyo Grande Creek. And here he has a horse farm. He was not able to run his horses that he boards because there were large holes in the ground, which, you know, with expensive horses, having a broken leg would have put somebody out of business. When I worked for the County of Monterey in 1989, we had the Loma Prieta quake, and there we had row crop lettuce, and the fields were disturbed like this. Sand was brought up into lettuce. Lettuce takes clayey soils, and the fields had to be re-leveled at the cost of millions of dollars. So it's not strictly a building thing. For an ag county, this can be a big deal, too. This is the levee just to the side of the Cardoza Ranch. You notice that it was completely fissured. Our county public works crew was out there the next day and completely repaired this. We were lucky that it was a dry winter. We had a full creek here, this could have been a flood situation.
For a second time.
Pardon me?
It had already been a flood situation.
In 95.
Right.
Yeah. And this would have been, and we don't need any more repeats of that. This is the Davis residence, which I jokingly call the crack house. It goes to show that buildings cannot take large permanent displacements of the ground. Now, this could be engineered to resist that type of movement, but this house was built before the magnitude or even the problem was realized at all. So why was there so much damage? There were two things going on, two strikes against Oceana. One is it was poorly compacted fill. I'll explain why that was in a second. It wasn't done to modern construction techniques that we do today. The young sand dunes near the beach are prone to liquefaction because they're young and they're very soft. And then something we call enhanced shaking, the proverbial bowl of jello, because not only does Oceana have young, soft soils, it sits on approximately 800 feet of soft sand, silt, and clay deposited when the ocean was moving in and out during the last ice age. So those are the two things that really make it a dangerous area. I talked about the artificial fill in the previous slide. What you see in this image is you'll see an air photo of Oceano as it is today. You'll also see some blue mapping. Those maps show the filled-in areas are swamps. The open areas are old channels. Oreo Grande Creek has been rerouted by man since 1874. This blue map is an 1874 map done by the U.S. Coast Survey, a predecessor of the Geologic Survey. They exist for the whole state of California on the coast. And I overlay this in our GIS system to be at the same scale as the modern imagery. So what you see is that the sand dunes, they leveled the tops off the sand dunes, filled in the marshes to create developable lots. If you look at a tract map of Oceano and a lot of other places, you have square city lots. But the reason they were able to make those square lots is they knocked off the high spots and filled in low spots. Unfortunately, there were not grading codes. There were not building inspectors. That's just the way it was done at the turn of the century. Here's what the USGS did. These red dots are places where they brought their cone penetrometer truck and drilled borings. Each one of these dots has very detailed information, much more detailed than we get from applicants. And all these drill holes, logs, will be available on the internet today at no cost. So when consultants do projects in Oceano, they will have this wealth of valuable information free at their disposal to incorporate. What I'm going to show you is, just look back here. Do you see cross-section A through A prime? That's the section that runs north through south through Oceano. Goes through the airport. Does everybody see that? Do we have a laser pointer here? If you look at the
you got one over there.
Yeah,
we cursor should do it.
There you go. Thank you.
That's the second time. I'm on charge for the information.
Put on Ellen's tab for me.
Yeah.
Here's A. This line I'm going to show you goes down parallel to the coast, through the airport, down into Oreo Grande Creek. So we're looking at a section normal to the coast.
May I interrupt you for a second, if you...
Certainly.
When you went through the airport, is there where we had the damage on the runway?
Correct.
So it happened right at the spot?
Yes.
That's the runway, right?
This is the runway right here. We, for various reasons, homeland security reasons, we were not able to drill on the runway. We were able to drill as close as we could to it out in the kind of the turf next to the runway. But that was of a major concern because we want the airports to be functional after an earthquake. Okay, I hesitate to put up charts and stuff because they can be complicated, but what I'd like you to see is these are color-coded. The cool colors are areas of no liquefaction. The warmer colors are areas of liquefaction. This is the ground surface here. This red, yellow, and orange zone is the zone of liquefaction. Okay, this is for the energy delivered in the San Simeon earthquake, which was magnitude 6.5. Now, hold that in your mind. I'll go back and forth between this scenario and what we would have if we had a 6.8 on the Los Osos fault, which is an active earthquake fault. Notice how those areas got a little bit redder? Let's go back and see that again. From yellow on the left to red. So the point is that even though for all of us who experienced it, the San Simeon earthquake was absolutely terrifying and shook hard, but just a slightly larger earthquake would have much greater effect. And how this is quantified in the report, and they go into quite lengthy technical details, but this is what I would like you to glean from this, is there's a measure that scientists use called the liquefaction potential index, which is a measure of damage to foundations. Green indicates no damage. Red indicates damage. And the size is proportionate to the damage. It's a scale from 0 to 100. Anything over 5 is considered severe. And on the left, you see a repeat of the San Simeon, which shows liquefaction in the areas where we did encounter it, North Swing area, the Juanita Coolidge area, and then the airport and the Cardoza Ranch. But if we turn up the shaking a little bit, look how other areas now pop up by the airport here. Additional things on North Swing over here on the other side of Pier Avenue. And the damage gets proportionally larger. So that is really kind of the point that I would like you to get from this, is that we now have some very specific information on the type of liquefaction and the severity of it. Could it? What do you guys think? Yes. You should know me well enough. Here's why. If you look at the seismicity of our little part of the world, here's the San Simeon earthquake, the 1952 twin of it, the Bryson earthquake, which is a 6.0, 27 Lompoc, the whole series of Parkfield quakes, some offshore things in what we call the Santa Lucia fault offshore, some more on the north coast. The point is that these are all 5, 6, and that's when we start to see this kind of damage. So the earthquake history bears out that the whole county is subject to earthquakes, which is not news, I hope. So rather than bring gloom and doom and say that we're part of the county is going to fall off into the ocean, what can we do here as a county to make this safer for our citizens? First we can do is fine-tune our existing hazard maps. I'll show you an example of how we might do this. We can require liquefaction studies per the Uniform Building Code. That is something that Chapters 18 of the Building Code allows our building official to require, so we already have the authority. We can ask applicants to do liquefaction mitigation measures. That could include special foundation designs, such as deeper foundations or more reinforcement in them, or ground improvement techniques. Let me just show you a few of these things. Okay, this, what you're looking at here is an image of our existing geologic study area maps. The reddish area is a zone of high liquefaction. The yellow area is moderate. What I've done now is I've overlaid the USGS liquefaction potential index dots on it. And what falls out is interesting. We have actually green areas inside a high area of liquefaction, and we have high areas inside a yellow, a moderate, and we have also in the moderate areas of no liquefaction. Looking at the geology here, Highway 1 is kind of a dividing line between the old terrace, which sits above Oceano, and the young sand dunes and swamps on the west side of Highway 1. If I were to redraw this map, I don't think I would have this quite as high. I reserve the right to change that, but just right now, seeing these, the USGS has acquired site-specific data shows that the liquefaction hazard is not as severe as we've believed. That's useful because one of the goals of our program in the geology part of planning is that we want to focus the efforts where they're needed, not just make everybody do geology for the fun of it. We want to target the high hazard areas, and those that aren't, why put people through it? I mentioned ground improvements. When I talked about foundations, one is it could be what we call either caissons or piles where they go through the weak layer, the liquefiable layer, into something solid. You could see that from those geologic cross-sections with the red zones. That would be one thing. there is a technique called dynamic compaction where a giant weight is dropped from a crane. I don't think that we want to go there in Oceano, but this was used on the prison in Avenel, and that's a whole different story. Something else we can do is stone columns where they drill a hole and put gravel in, and then put the building on top of that and inject gravel into the ground. So there, we do have a variety of tools in our toolbox to deal with both from the ground improvement side and from the building side. The point is that liquefaction, once it's identified, can be mitigated. It's probably at least a 10 to 1 to 101 cost-benefit ratio of strengthening foundations than repairing damaged structures. What I'm talking about is several thousand dollars worth of steel versus rebuilding the crack house. You can see that it's much cheaper to build it right than to rebuild it. We can be proactive. We have the tools in place. We can reduce damage and losses from earthquakes. By doing that, the money we save from not having to rebuild in areas that we knew were dangerous can be used for other things. We have a whole list of programs in this county that need money, and I don't see that we need to spend it on things that could have prevented from being broken. How do we get this report? The board has copies. This will be available on the internet at no cost as an Acrobat file. I won't read the web address. The people watching this can read it off the screen or go to usgs.gov. We're also going to link this on our planning department homepage. So if you go to our homepage, there'll be a link to this as well. The seismic cone penetrometer data, all that stuff they got with the truck, will also be available for the consultants and interested individuals. And we have taken the liberty of printing 50 color copies and 50 black and white copies, which will be available at the planning department front counter. So I say get them while they're hot. They probably won't last. But we do think this is a serious problem, and we would like to get the information out there and work with people to make this a solvable problem, not a horrible thing that people can't deal with. Thank you for your attention and interest.
Mr. Sajjan, question.
I know that you went to Oceano because of the damages, but is this true if you follow the railroad track towards Pismo or further south to where the refinery is and or any places in Nipomo?
It probably doesn't occur in Nipomo because Nipomo is up on the mesa. It could occur farther north in Pismo because that's geologically similar. We're just limited to really how much we could study the area with the limited resources of the geological survey. But the point is that there are other parts of this county that could have this problem. I think one in Supervisor Pinard's district probably would have been Avila. Had UNICAL not removed all the soil in Avila and recompacted it, I suspect this might have happened as well there.
Something good comes up, something bad.
Well, the unintended consequences, and sometimes they're good and sometimes they're bad, but in this case they were good.
Well, I'm glad to see members of planning department here because hopefully we'll learn from this for future building plans for Oceano. I guess we need to consider this. And it will be helpful if we send a copy of this, or I'll take care of it, a complimentary copy to Oceano Community Service District.
I'll give you an extra. That's just let me know how many you want, and I'll make sure you have them.
It'd be nice to have some for their board members. So that in the future we plan accordingly, they'll know where we're coming from.
And one thing, Supervisor Shadian, is that we're trying to put together a community workshop with myself and members of the U.S. Geological Survey to take down Oceano for the members of the community.
And would this be the first time you folks do something of that nature in Oceano? The reason I'm asking is how are you going to reach out to the community to invite them to this, let's say, town hall meeting?
I don't know the exact mechanism how we would invite it. I assume that we would announce it in the newspaper and the media. And
we'll be glad to help you when the time
okay.
comes, just to be sure that we went out of our way to bring as many people as possible.
And one thing that I'm also working on is a trifold pamphlet for people in that area, a non-technical pamphlet to, I'm in Oceano, what do I have to do to try and, I wouldn't expect the average homeowner or builder to comprehend something that's technical, so we're trying to distill it down of here's what you need to do.
We need to take some responsibility to educate the average person, especially
agreed.
Those in the market that want to build a house. and happen to be in this area.
I agree.
Even with that liquefaction issue, and you were showing what you do subterranean, what I call subterranean, do most of the Uniform Building Code requirements on earthquaking general construction tend to also allow for, I guess, a fudge factor with this liquefaction, in other words, to keep the house from falling apart. Other than that, pack houses are probably 20 years old. They've changed things since then, or is that a relatively new house?
I think that's a relatively new house, and the building code does account for it. It's just a question of whether we, the planning department, actually require people to do these things. We do have a geologic study area specifically set up for liquefaction, which we're revising, and that is really the mechanism that brings people into doing those studies. So people won't voluntarily do it typically, but if we ask them to, and there is one way of doing what's called a factor of safety analysis, which is, I believe, the fudge factor you're alluding to. Just like most engineering things, is there, because it's hard to characterize something, you have to put a fudge factor in to account for that uncertainty.
Right.
So that is dealt with in this. Thank you.
I just know that when we built one of the first houses when I was a kid, you know, it was all straps and two one bys to that, and now you've got full shear walls and everything else, and there's the whole thing.
And hopefully the lesson is that, you know, as somebody in the geotechnical profession, the only way we ever get better is we see what fell apart in earthquakes, and then we say, oh, that didn't work. Here's what works. Yeah. So, unfortunately, it takes something like this to learn, but we would be negligent if we didn't learn from those things.
I think I discussed one with you where they're actually tying the corners into there too tight, and they begin to pull on each other more than they would be if they were allowed to be a little bit looser.
As they say, too much of a good thing.
Yeah. Ms. Pinard.
Just a kind of a follow-up question. You mentioned that something like this could have happened in Avila. What, besides being another coastal community, what indicator would have said that would have been a possibility?
I think it would have been the way to have gone about looking at that question would be to take those old coast survey maps and see where the areas of marshes and swamps were, then to overlay them either on top of our current air photos we have in our GIS or our parcels and see which, if building did occur over those old swamplands. So that would be something that staff could do to evaluate if this problem was present in other parts of the county.
Would it make any difference then too? I mean, that's something that could happen throughout the county. That's not just the community of Avila.
That's correct.
Would that also have any impact on the fact that certain beaches were formed differently? Like Avila is a south-facing beach, so it's not got the same wave action as something that's not a south-facing beach.
Yeah, that's part of it. But also remember that as geologists, we have a much deeper view of time. And when I was talking about that 800 feet of sand under Oceano, that's going back in the tens of thousands of years, not in the wave currents were necessarily the same as they are today. So we have both, the relatively young, under 500-year kind of geology, and then the much older ice age type cycle.
Was there one other correlation there that you mentioned, the sand areas that were leveled in order to make fill in other areas? Was there any correlation between the filled areas? Because I noticed when you were giving your map, you're saying, well, like right next to each other, one was impacted and one wasn't. Would the one that wasn't be the old sand and the new one be where they leveled it out?
That's absolutely correct. What we found is that the old map, which showed the filled-in areas, absolutely correlates with where the damaged and the red-tagged houses were within a matter of feet. So there's a very strong correlation of that.
So really the 800 feet below that was not as important an issue as to whether or not that was just filled.
No, it's a different issue because the 800 feet of sand made it shake like a bowl of jello, and that stronger level of shaking is what made the upper younger sand liquefy. So it took the bowl of jello shaking to liquefy the upper loose artificial fill. So there were two things playing there. Thank you, though.
Okay.
That was kind of like the marina area in San Francisco.
Yeah, and I think that's worth noting that the I'm just a co-author of this report. The lead author, Tom Holzer, was the principal scientist who investigated the marina district. And his comment to me was this was eerily reminiscent of the marina district. But yet, let's just take a look at that and think. The marina district today, 15 years after Loma Prieta, been completely rebuilt. Property values have come back up. And you know, I know there's concern in the community that having stringent requirements might cause insurance rates to go up and get harder to get loans. And I am sensitive to that. But also I realize from being involved with Marina that things were rebuilt, the community came back, and is resilient now. So we can draw the analogy that geologically it's the same, but also they were able to pull through and become successful.
Shirley?
Yep. No, I would like to thank you very much for this report.
And you're welcome.
I'll transmit our appreciation to USGS for their help, both financially and technically. But I think the point that you make is very well taken, that if we follow, you know, these more stringent rules and regulations in our building permitting in areas that are prone to liquefaction, that it actually is cheaper in the long run, even though the builders and developers might be complaining about it at the time, you know, that it's too expensive, we can't, you know, we're going to go out of business.
And I understand, but really,
but it's cheaper.
It is the money in the bank for us, because the money that we would not have to outlay to rebuild things can be sitting in the county's funds earning interest. It truly, you cannot get that rate of return elsewhere.
Okay. Eric Greening, you had a question?
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I also appreciate this excellent report. I'm glad you scheduled it. Well, first of all, I'm very glad that a few years ago you hired a county geologist, because for a long time we didn't have one, and it's very good that we have Mr. Rosenberg and had him on staff in time for this event, which has affected our entire county. I have a couple of linked questions. First of all, are there any other areas elsewhere in the county, specifically in the North County, that have drawn specific attention to either liquefaction vulnerability or some other type of vulnerability similar to what Oceano has? In other words, other places we should be looking at as closely. I recognize Oceano as special because being so far from the epicenter, it still had major impacts. It was kind of surprising in the North County, actually, how many areas on bedrock hilltops seemed to shake far more than bedrock hilltops normally do, but I don't know what that's about. But the other question is, normally in the past, before this earthquake, the main question that would be asked just in routine project approvals is, are we in an all-quest Priolo zone? And that seemed to be the one screen you would look through to see whether it needed extra attention in terms of building standards. Now, all-quest Priolo appears to just relate to physical proximity to an active fault and not to analyzing these issues of soil liquefaction and so on. Is there some legal definition analogous to all-quest Priolo that can form another screen, or do we do this on a case-by-case basis or try to expand the reach of all-quest Priolo, or how do we deal with this on a process basis? So anyway, those are my questions, but again, I'm very thankful for a very coherent report and an oral report that actually normal people can understand, and for having Mr. Rosenberg with us. Thank you.
Thank you for your very kind words, Mr. Greening.
I was going to say that the prime example of liquefaction in North County is a hole from hell in the city parking lot.
Because
that basically was...
Yeah, that's a...
Not like an
oceanic. No, it's a little bit different kind, but definitely it was in. Let me try and answer some of Mr. Greening's questions, and as best I remember them, in North County there was liquefaction in the bed of the Salinas River under the Templeton Bridge, and that's because those are very young river sediments that have been deposited basically in the last tens of years, so they're very soft and easily shaken. I think the other question was the Alquist Priolo screening. He is correct in that a lot of people say, if I'm not on a fault, then I don't have a problem. But yet, as we've seen today, you can be miles away from a fault and still have issues other than the building getting torn in half. Now, we have at the county level our geologic study areas. There is a parallel program to Alquist Priolo at the state level, which is called the Seismic Hazard Mapping Act, which was enacted in 1990 or 91, I believe. And the state geologist designates those areas. To date, they've completed Southern California, funded by FEMA. They had some FEMA money to do part of the Bay Area, and that's where they are. They told me several years ago they would be in San Luis Obispo no sooner than 2014. So there is a parallel program, but the state, just like the county, has budget problems, and I think if we wrote them a check, they would come down, but I'm not going to ask or even suggest the board do that.
Yeah. Sorry, I just had to add a little bit of humor. We didn't have the budget problems until the state created it for us, okay?
We won't go any farther on that. But to answer Mr. Greening's question, there is a parallel Alquist Priolo program. It's just that those maps do not exist for this part of the state at this time. They may at some future date.
So we thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Okay.
Obvious for each member of Oceano Committee Services, Rick, I would appreciate it.
I thank your attention and good questions, and I will try and bring USGS and myself down to Oceano. We will give a talk to the community to try and explain this and help people build safely there. Thank you very much, and please contact me if you have any other information,
sure,
questions.
Yeah, and if you all come back down to this area, come on up and look at that crack on the hillside of above our house.
It's on my list.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. With that, then I need a motion to receive and file.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Sajjan, seconded by Ms. Pinard. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Yes.
Aye. So carried. Thanks again. And
thank you very much.
If you lift more of those two-wire bales, you get just as strong as lifting one three-wire bales.
I did 20 this weekend. I'm feeling pretty good.
You find out how far out of shape you really are. Thank you again.
Thank you.
With that, then, we're going to go back to item C7. So, Nestor, we began on this, and with all due respect to Mr. Budwell, he was having difficulty trying to communicate what you wanted to say. So at this point, where we're at is that the board had a few questions about what it could or couldn't do, and so we're waiting for you to go ahead and make your presentation on your appeal on this.
Can I ask a question, or maybe just... Were you told what happened prior to your arriving, so you know?
I did, and I learned even a little bit more this afternoon in talking to Mr. Pope, so I probably will have a little bit of a modification from some previous conversations. Greg Nestor from Napomo, thank you for your patience this afternoon. We've been down a long road in a potential annexation to NCSD. They've written us a letter saying they're not in a position to do that now. So we've abandoned our approach to NCSD upon their request and about 16 months of potential processing. We had developed a map that was presented to the Planning Commission that showed a open space parcel that was 22.38 acres, which is a little bit short of the 60-40 ratio that the clustering clause requires for RR zoning when you cluster in that area. We attempted to exceed the 60% by putting a 200-foot open space easement across the back of the lots, which got us up around 69%. In theory, that may have been good, but I don't believe that we had technical support from County Council and ultimately from staff. We then considered reducing the parcel size to the 60-40 ratio requirement that the open space needed to have and providing a community water system. Today, that's what's in front of you, and the map that is being represented is a 60% open space parcel. The 40% makes up the balance of the lots. That size is under 2.5 acres for the new seven lots. It's my understanding this afternoon that that's a state requirement and that this board does not have the opportunity to grant a variance to that. With that in mind, I would ask the board to consider a small reduction in the open space ratio from the 24 acres to 22.38 acres to maintain our 2.5 minimum parcel size so we can put individual wells there. In my time spent at NCSD, I don't believe that they're interested in having a community system right across the street from the one at Knollwood. So we felt that this was the best for both us as developers and the ultimate buyers to be able to control their own water fate on a lot by lot basis. We would accept today this modified map that's in front of you that shows a community water system if that's the wishes of the board. If we had our way, we would like a reduction of the open space from 24 to 22.38 with individual wells on each site, 2.5 acre minimum size, and go from there.
Supervisor Ryan made a point that if you were to have a community, well, in the future will allow it an easier task to be annexed to NCSD than if it was individual wells.
That's probably true. I did talk to Doug Jones about this particular situation a number of times, and he said that there are many parcels with inside NCSD that are served on by individual wells, regardless of the perimeter annexations that are there. I actually own one piece, so I can attest to that.
My choice would have been that we keep the open space lot the size required and go smaller on the parcels, but apparently we don't have that discretion.
That was my first choice, but I don't believe Regional Water Quality Control Board allows that to happen here.
Mr. Lopes, you were going to make a comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, the 2.5 acre minimum for the residential lots is where there's individual wells and septic systems. The ordinance in the state will allow us to go below 2.5 acres if there's a community water system.
Right.
So,
that's the dilemma we're facing because it's so close either direction that that's, I think, is a discussion we're having.
Okay.
That's what we need to do. Yeah. Mr. Nesser, what's the downside for you if you were to go the required open space less on the parcels, but with one well to serve all seven units?
Well, it's kind of like a homeowners association. The theories are good and the actualities are not quite as good. You know, you have a system that has to be monitored and there'll be monthly costs and fees and a gathering of possibly same thinking people or possibly not. So I guess the practicalities of it are the downside. It's probably cheaper, to be honest, for me to drill one well and provide mm-hmm. that system than to drill individual wells. But I guess from a practical standpoint, I felt that individual wells for each parcel would be the best use for the ultimate owner of the parcels.
All right. Mr. Ryan?
Yeah. We made the comment before you came in today, and we talked about the community well. And someday... You know, maybe right now community services down there doesn't want to get into anything else. But somewhere in the future, I just imagine that they will, and they'll try to pick some of that up. And if they did, having a small system would be easier for them to blend into than having to go in there and go into houses all on separate wells.
Or potentially abandon that particular well and increase the pumping right across the street, which was a topic of conversation in the evolution, where they have the facility set up there and the downhole pump is rated at 250, but the capability is 400. And we tried to buy into that, but it was too late. So I think they would actually abandon that system and improve the one across the street to its full capability. I'm speaking for NCSD just from my half of the conversation, but I did want to make that known.
Okay. Is there any questions? Thank you, Mr. Nesser.
Thank you.
We did go to the public. There was no public. I don't see that it's changed any. If we'll do that, we'll close public then, and we'll bring it back to the board.
Well, let me.
What's our pleasure?
Try to make a motion because I think on a separate wells it will be a better project. And regardless that in the future could be better if it all went on one community well, but it might not be what NCSD wants at that time. Well, first motion to reduce the very slight on open space lot and go with the seven structures with separate wells.
The motion would be that then the open space lot would be the 22.3 acres right. And a 2.2 and a half.
Nine.
I ask second it for a vote.
Yeah.
The clerk would like a little help with
it. Yeah, the motion, as I repeated, was is.
Actually, what we're going to need is some help with. I'm sure that this means a couple of condition changes, and maybe they could read those into the record. Would it need to be tentative, or could they do that now, Mr. Orton?
If they have the changes available, they could do it now. Now, you're asking, is the tentative motion that there be a reduced open space parcel size?
Yeah, 22.3 and maintain 2.5 acres for parcel size with individual wells.
With individual wells?
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't be meeting the requirements of the ordinance for the minimum
open space.
Open space.
Open space.
We're just told that we can't do that.
We'll see.
Yes, that would be the
look over there. All right, the motion is that, and I know what Mr. Sajjan is doing. He's trying to get to the point where we can get a conclusion on this. So there's a motion and a second. I don't see any other discussion. Ms. Bernard?
I understand the intention of where we're trying to go, but you can get there by putting it on one well, and that way you're not changing, because basically what you're getting is an extra lot at the cost of the open space.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do that, then I think that something needs to be set up for the future. I think the point Mr. Ryan made was really right on. In exchange for doing that, then do the one well, because basically what you're getting is a whole other lot that you wouldn't ordinarily be entitled to if you kept the open space requirement accurate. So in exchange for that benefit, I would prefer that there be the one well so that it's set up to change in the future where you're trying to go.
Okay. Then the motion is to do it one way. If that doesn't pass, then we'll come back with another motion.
I understand that, but I think still NCSD can come back and abandon the existing one well and go to their own.
We have a motion on the floor. Roll call, please.
Just for clarification purposes, this is going to take some changes in the conditions, and I think
what we want to do is resolve what direction we're going to go, and then I think we can make appropriate motions for findings in that.
Well, I think staff is saying that they can probably do them today if you want to take a few-minute break, if that's the case.
We've already sketched out some changes, but we need to review them with council for about 10 minutes.
Let this action go first, and we'll see if we need to go that way.
Mr. Ashajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovid.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
No.
Mrs. Bernard?
No.
Mr. Ryan?
No.
All right. Your secondary motion?
Okay. Secondary motion will be to go on smaller lots with 60% open space and one community. Well.
Second.
Okay. That is the existing plan that he has presented to you, Mr. Lopes.
Yes, sir. That's in the staff report today. Here.
That's the one that this one's
with the resolution.
So that's staff recommendation.
That's staff's recommendation.
Okay.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Bernard?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye. With that, then, that concludes that item, and thank you. That does conclude our business for the next 3 weeks.
3 weeks? What are we going to do?
We'll be back sometime in September, I think. Okay. Have a break.